Ministry, who is involved in the research, says that the aged pregnant people, women, and those with pre-existing health conditions need to take precautions.
And she rolled her eyes, and now Martin Croxall, I say, got it absolutely right, finds herself upbraided. In other news, the drive and the charge to get thousands of new social homes, but exactly what would they cost? And after that hit TV show... Spoilers, don't worry, I'm not going to tell you who won, but as traitors, how do you spot a liar? We'll talk to a leading psychologist. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, an internal report has found discrimination against black people is baked into the governance of Britain's biggest police force. It concluded the Metropolitan Police's systems, leadership and culture are producing racial harm. It also found darker-skinned staff are labelled confrontational, while their lighter-skinned colleagues are treated with more leniency. Former Tory Police and Crime Commissioner Festus Akinbosoya has told LBC the force is facing major issues.
This report particularly looks at the way that black officers specifically are treated historically over a 40-year period. The evidence shows that black officers are nearly twice as likely to face misconduct and a much harsher outcome for complaints made against them internally.
The Met says it's committed to acting and learning from concerns raised. The Prime Minister says he's angry and frustrated by the mistaken release of prisoners in recent weeks. The latest blunder saw two men freed in error from Wandsworth Prison in South London last week. Searches are continuing for the Algerian sex offender Brahim Kadir Sharif. Sir Keir Starmer says he knows that the government must roll up its sleeves and fix the justice system.
We have to make sure that whatever changes are needed are made, and that's why calling in the governors is really important. Looking at the technology is really important. Yes, there's a huge burden on the prison service. That independent inquiry, very, very important to tell us precisely what the problems are.
The Prime Minister's also said it's a matter for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor whether he agrees to an interview in the United States. A Congress committee has requested that he gives evidence over his friendship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. But the group have no power to force Andrew to give evidence. He's always denied any wrongdoing. 11 people were arrested before Aston Villa's Europa League match against Maccabi Tel Aviv last night. More than 700 police officers were on duty because of concerns over potential disorder. Visiting fans were barred from the match because of public safety concerns. And shareholders at Tesla have approved a record-breaking pay package for its boss Elon Musk, which could be worth up to $1 trillion. But it depends on him meeting certain performance goals over the next 10 years. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 97.36. It closed down 41 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today. And another mild day, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet. Ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 3 minutes after seven on Friday, November the 7th. 3 minutes after seven, Friday, November the 7th. The game, of course, mired in controversy. The safety advisory group suggesting away fans could not go. Well, it has gone through, but there have been a series of arrests and there have been demonstrations as well from both sides, as it were. We'll give you full details on that. In other significant news, the Andrew, formerly known as Prince, or Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, summoned to appear before Congress.
Democrats are now asking for a formal interview from the UK's former Prince Andrew. It's all tied to their investigation into convicted offender Jeffrey Epstein.
With Reform UK continuing to surge in the polls, what's it like to live in a local authority where they're in charge? We take you to the Garden of England, to Kent, but is everything coming up rosy in the garden?
Nine councillors chucked out, sweary Zoom meetings and a row over an erotic novel. How are Reform getting on with governing Kent? I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the latest.
Not a great start, is it? Plus, get ready for the world's first $1 trillion pay packet.
On the 2025 CEO Performance Award to our founder and CEO Elon Musk, with over 75% voting in favor. Approved.
That was Brandon Earhart, Tesla's general counsel and corporate secretary. That trillion dollars, by the way, in pounds, that would be £760 billion pay packet. No, I'd still come to work in the morning, I assure you. And we say farewell to Shirley Valentine.
I like chips and egg on a Tuesday. Today is Thursday.
I'll pretend it's Tuesday.
Where's me steak?
I'll give it to dog.
From the maid on Upstairs, Downstairs to starring and indeed getting an Oscar nomination, Shirley Valentine star Pauline Collins has died. Age 85, we'll have a full appreciation of her career.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Plus, and I assure you, I will not give even a clue as to who triumphed last night in The Traitors. But as it is being reported that that has come in with millions of you tuning in later in the show, how do you spot a liar? What's the tell-tale signs when someone's trying to get a fib across? We'll be speaking to a leading psychologist. But to events yesterday, and we go to Villa Park in Birmingham, because before the kick-off, it did kick off. LBC's Luke Shanahan was there and joins me now. Just remind listeners initially, Luke, what was the controversy about this match in the first place? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Yes, I suppose the original kickoff was last month when Maccabi Tel Aviv fans were banned from attending last night's Europa League game at Villa Park. We saw plenty of political football next. The ban remained in place despite calls from on high, as high as the Prime Minister, to lift it. And then the protest groups started to announce their plans to attend in banned supporters' stead. Now, I didn't see much of the football last night, but after all of that, proceedings inside Villa Park looked fairly straightforward, Nick, ending in a unsurprising 2-0 win for the home side. It was a rather more tense affair outside the ground, especially before kick-off, with a couple of hundred pro-Palestine protesters less than happy, let's say, with the arriving supporters. And the feeling was often mutual, judging by more than one exchange I saw last night. At times, some of the 700 officers policing Birmingham last night had to force activists back from the entrances, accompanied by a now familiar chant. Much of the attention in the weeks before the game had, of course, been on the banned Maccabi Tel Aviv supporters. Ahead of the game, we heard from Birmingham Police Commander Chief Superintendent Tom Joyce, who told us the ban wasn't put in place because of threats to the travelling Israelis.
We have intelligence and information that says that there is a section of Maccabi fans, not all Maccabi fans, but a section of them who engage in quite significant levels of hooliganism. What is probably quite unique in these circumstances is whereas often hooligans will clash with other hooligans and it will be contained within the football fan base. We've had examples where a section of Maccabi fans were targeting people not involved in football matches, and certainly we had an incident in Amsterdam last year which has informed some of our decision making. So it is exclusively a decision we made on the basis of the behaviour of a subsection of Maccabi fans, but all the reaction that could occur obviously form part of that as well.
Yet even without away fans, hooligans or otherwise, there was still unfortunately some trouble last night. 11 people were arrested, 5 for racially aggravated public order offences, 1 for breach of the peace, and a 21-year-old arrested after someone tried to throw a firework into a crowd. I spoke to lifelong Villa fan Lord Ian Austin about what we saw outside the ground.
Look, I just sort of think, what sort of country are we when people are being told they can't come to football match because of their you know, their nationality or their ethnicity. I think it's a real shame that the match, the game is being dragged into all of this. What Villa fans like myself want tonight is an ordinary game. We want to watch the Villa. Hopefully we'll win, but we want a proper game. And we think everybody should be able to come just as normal.
Well, Lord Austin half got his wish. There was a small counter-protest group on the other side of Villa Park with an Israel flag and posters saying keep anti-Semitism out of football. I also saw a few flatbed lorries carrying huge electronic billboards displaying messages against anti-Semitism. But until the whistle was blown inside, the loudest voices belonged to the 200 or so pro-Palestine protesters outside the Trinity Road end who sang and chanted from about 5 p.m. until, like at any football match, a few of the crowd began to leave early around 8:30. Still, Nick, things were largely peaceful, although not very quiet, and so I can't say personally how warranted the apparently unprecedented police operation was, but it certainly seemed to achieve what police said was the main priority, and that was protecting public safety.
LBC's Luke Shanahan reporting 10 minutes after 7. Let's turn to Ashish Prashar, who's campaign manager for Game Over Israel and served as an advisor to the Middle East Peace Envoy. Thank you for coming on the show. What is the intent or the purpose of Game Over Israel? Good morning to you.
Pretty simple. I mean, we don't want Israel in football. You know, football is probably the greatest sport in the world. It's the only sport that everyone everywhere in the world plays. It's the only cultural thing. People talk about Eurovision, everything. But it's the only cultural thing that people from South Africa to Brazil to England, everyone plays and touches. It's also the greatest normalization tool. When you're saying somebody participates in it, you're saying you're okay with their presence. And unfortunately, you know, since the 16th of September this year, the UN did confirm that this Israel had committed a genocide. Now, at that point, like, how can we continue to be normal with a state entity, anything that has participated
well,
in that?
I'll just refer you to the words that Lord Austin said to my colleague, Luke Shanahan. Why can't people just go and see a game of football? That's what Lord Austin told my colleague.
No, it's a really good question. And
well, would you answer it then?
The simple question is, when you've committed a genocide, your state, your society is the one that committed that genocide. Look, history has shown that.
Let's just, for the purpose, we have to say that it is feared that there's genocide on both sides, so we must also put that there. But none of the players are involved in the alleged, or as you say, genocide. I doubt that the managers were either, or the fans. So why? Why deny them a chance to watch a game of soccer?
Well, did we not do this to Yugoslavia?
I'd rather talk about what happened last night in Villa Park, if we can.
By saying that, we banned Yugoslavian fans during the civil war that led to a genocide. We banned Germany post-war after committing a genocide. These are all consistent in historical things in Europe. Why is Israel and Israeli fans, why do they get the exception to history in this moment? And to Lord Austin's point, actually, the police did their job. This is a political football because the prime minister waded into this. Traditionally, you and me know, Nick, that prime ministers have said when police have made decisions...
I know, it was very rare.
Operational decision. It's an operational decision. The prime minister turned this into a political football. It's incomprehensible that he's made this and turned it nearly into...
Do you not rather mourn the fact now that hopefully you enjoy living in this country, in the United Kingdom? We've had to accept that we couldn't actually allow a group of fans to come to a football match in the heart of England. Does that not give you a sense of grief?
No, because we banned fans from all football clubs across Europe from violence in the past. This is about the fans who committed violence. And in this case, the intelligence was shared by both the Dutch Europol and Greek police that a couple of hundred fans that do travel for their away group are trained killers in the IDF and have committed violence in all those countries.
I'm grateful for your input. Ashish Prashar, thank you. Campaign manager of Game Over Israel, 12 after 7. Listening to that, Eddie Hammerman, who attended the game yesterday, but attended not so much, I think, as a football fan, but as a British Jew. You join me now. Mr. Hammerman, what do you take from the game? Fortunately, has now gone through, but there have been arrests and there have been demos. Mr. Hammerman, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Well, interestingly, I'm an Arsenal fan, not a Maccabi Tel Aviv fan.
Right.
So I've got a bit of a soft spot for Unai Emery and would happily see British...
Just to remind listeners, he was the manager of Arsenal. He's now doing great things at Villa Park.
He was indeed. I was supporting Villa last night. I'm not Israeli. I'm a proud British Jew, proud supporter of Israel. And I felt a bit sorry for the Villa fans, actually. And I think the feedback, when speaking to Villa fans, was they thought the away fans should have been there. There was a danger of it being a Jew-free zone, which is why I went. Villa fans stayed away from the game because I thought they were scared of the aggro, and Jews were scared to be or intimidated to be in that space. Your report said a moment ago that there were demonstrations, right? What were their demonstrations about? Jews were scared to be in that space. And I think if we live in a country where Jews are being intimidated off our streets, I think that's very sad. And that's one of the reasons, or that's the main reasons I went to Birmingham last night. So it wasn't a Jew-free zone.
Comment, if you would, on the points made by my other contributor, Mr. Hammerman, that football is a great social unifier, indeed a global unifier. And if crimes are being committed to that level by Israel, then the fans should not be allowed to come to a game such as last night's.
Look, things are complicated. If I start to go into detail about how there are Muslim players, there are Christian players that play for the Israel national team and for Maccabi Tel Aviv, there's lots of nuance here. Football is a great leveller. My worry is for us here in Britain, right? That's my big concern. We have hate marches going on in London every week. There were two Jews that were killed in Manchester just over a month ago, which we were shocked, but we were not surprised. And there will be more Jews killed in this country if the government and the police do not crack down or start to crack down on this hatred. And there is real hatred on the streets, and that is the country we're living in at the moment. And that
Eddie Hammerman, I will leave it there. Thank you. You're an Arsenal fan, but you attended that game last night as a football fan and also as a Jewish person because you wanted Jewish presence there. Thank you for your input. Now over to you. The game, remember, the Prime Minister did, actually, as my previous contributor reminded us, he did wade in, which is pretty rare, and clearly he wasn't listened to. We'll take your calls on that. Also, Prime Minister reacting yesterday to the news of Andrew, formerly known as Andrew, being summoned by Congress.
My view is that anybody who has relevant information should always be willing to give it to whatever inquiries need that information, but the individual decision is a matter for him.
Should Andrew go? It's a yes or no, and I'll take your views on that too. 7:15, LBC News Headlines, then, Dominic Ennis.
An internal report has found discrimination against black people is baked into the leadership and culture of Britain's biggest police force. The Prime Minister says the mistaken release of prisoners in recent weeks is intolerable and has promised to fix the justice system. And 11 arrests have been made following protests around Maccabi Tel Aviv's match at Aston Villa last night. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across the UK. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. And that's because a car broke down. It's just been recovered, but it's still slow. In Acton, Gunnersbury Lane is partially blocked both ways after an accident, and that's causing delays. In Marylebone, Lisson Grove remains closed both ways, and that's also after an accident. On the Underground, the Central line's back up and running now, but with severe delays. That's the entire line. There's also severe delays on the District line. The big Dilly line remains part suspended. No service from Rainers Lane to Uxbridge. And the Metropolitan line also part suspended. It's not running between Baker Street and Aldgate. And then there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot. Like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet. Whoa. Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of the Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new, tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the racing?
Yeah, your best bet is to enter BetVictor for their new customer welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they give you £20 in free bets on the horse racing. But here's another tip. If you're at the races, head to the paddock. You get lots of info they don't put in the race cards.
Like what?
Like the fact I'm seeing one of them drop a lot of weight right now.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the racing at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in, bet on horse racing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:19, come to your football calls in just a moment. Let me tell you what's on the front pages of a couple of the newspapers. Well, I'll tell you what's on the front page of virtually all of the newspapers. And look, don't worry, there will be no way we will prize the word from my lips, but they all have photographs of the person who won last night's Celebrity Traitors. One newspaper even suggesting how they would know at this point, I have no idea, that it topped 10 million viewers. How on earth you'd know that? The overnights won't even surely be in yet, will they? They certainly won't have been in anyway when they printed that. But speaking of somebody who once made up the viewing figures of Who Shot JR in Dallas, I'd probably better move on from that. So that's the one picture, which I'm not going to say the identity of. Couple of papers have same stories. Both the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph go with the aspect of the BBC, the double standards, the newsreader who broke the rules by pulling a face because her script said pregnant people rather than women. But both the Mail and the Telegraph pointing out that it would appear there's still been no actual comment concerning the doctoring of that speech of Donald Trump in the episode of Panorama. We're looking at that in more detail later in the show. It really is double standards over there. The other story that gets a bit of traction is a political story. Both the Times and... Actually, the Times and the Guardian and the Eye going with roughly the same. Powell, as in Lucy Powell, the party's new deputy leader, in challenge to Reeves over tax plans, basically saying, do not... put income tax or any taxes up in the budget because you will be breaking manifesto promises. A quick look at the LBC app, and that is the story concerning David Lammy under mounting pressure over prison release chaos. One other at random. So Sky News is going with the story that we're just starting as well on their website. 11 arrests during night of protest at Aston Villa game. And let's pick up on that right now with Khaled in Leicester. You're on the radio, Khaled. Morning.
Morning, Nick. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Tell me what you take from last night. The Prime Minister's reaction, which wasn't really heeded, the police reaction, and the demonstrators' reactions.
I think, first of all, the Maccabi fans and the football team should come to Leicester. You know, we should let them come to Leicester.
Right.
Let them play their game. And I was involved a couple of years ago when they were in the riots here in Leicester.
You were involved in the riots, did you say?
Not involved in the riots. No. Involved in the sense that the police commander has called me. I know a lot of people have been here.
Sorry, I need to slow down here a little. The police commander called you when the riots kicked off. Am I hearing this correctly?
That's advising them, basically, on what's the practical solutions.
But why would they ring? Are you sort of a community liaison officer or something?
Well, I'm in the community. I've been here for many decades. And a lot of people know me over the years, etc.
I see.
Long story, but anyway, don't go about me. It's not about me, it's about the actual incident.
Okay. I'm just interested in why the police... I mean, okay, so they phoned you in a positive fashion then. They were seeking your input, were they?
They were seeking my input, and they called me there, and they were asking what my advice, what we should do under those circumstances, when things got very, very heated, should I say, at least. But anyway, yeah, so one of my points is, look, I've spoken to the police before, and the end solution to that particular issue was that many of the people who were intimidated were arrested, not the intimidators. And I've told the police before, I said, listen, next time just leave it to me. I'll sort it out myself.
Well, what do you mean by I'll sort it out? What does that mean?
I'll sort it out myself, meaning that I will talk to the perpetrators of the... I actually mentioned the perpetrators who have instigated this issue. You find out where they are, send me to them alone. I'll go alone, and I'll talk to them myself.
Okay.
Meaning that...
So when you... I mean, you're not going to threaten them. You're just trying to try and be rational with them. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. With these Maccabi fans, if they would come to... I'll deal with it myself. I've told the police. You don't need anybody. I have my creator with me. I have nothing to fear.
I mean, look, I commend you for your attempts at that. But if you've got possibly thousands of angry demonstrators against possibly hundreds of people or thousands who've made the journey from Tel Aviv, respectfully, Khaled, I don't think you in the middle would be able to negotiate that one down if it got ugly.
No, but the thing is, Nick, you know, if your intention is correct, why am I creator behind me? I've got nothing to fear. I can take that. I'll be honest with you.
No, I commend you for that. That's very good.
all their guns, all their tanks, everything in front of me, it doesn't mean beans to me. I'll be honest with you, it doesn't scare me in a not even a dot.
Right.
I will talk to them myself. And if the time for me to leave this world is coming, no big deal. It's gonna come one day. I might be sitting on the sofa.
Well, I don't want to brush that day forward, but thank you for all your input, Khalid. Do you think the game should have gone ahead? In fact, you'd have helped have it played at Leicester. Dear God, they need to play some decent football in Leicester at some point, because they haven't got a lot of it at the moment. Khalid, thank you. Speaking as a Leicester fan of more than half a century, let's go to other matters. And the Andrew scandal has taken a new twist. Andrew, Mountbatten-Windsor formally requested by a US Congress committee last night to give sworn evidence about his pal, the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Let's go to Congress. Democratic Congressman Suhas Subramaniam explaining why he wants Andrew to go for questioning.
I want to know what he knew about the entire criminal enterprise. It seemed like he'd been to the island. It seemed like he'd been very engaged and friendly with Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. And so he must have known a lot about their business dealings. He doesn't have to respond because he's a foreign citizen. He's not a citizen of the United States, right? But, you know, I think if he wanted to clear his name, if he wanted to do right by the victims, he would come forward.
Royal commentator Sarah Houston joins me now. Okay, reminding you, Sarah, that famous interview, or infamous interview in 2019, Andrew said, and I quote, under the right circumstances, if push came to shove and the legal advice was to do so, then I would be duty-bound to testify under oath. But he ain't going to go, is he? Good morning to you.
Morning to you, Nick. No, he's not going to go, I don't think. I mean, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, really, here, isn't he? But in addition to what he said to Emily Maitlis in 2019 in that interview, he also, when he settled with Virginia Giuffre in February 2022, he said in a statement, he pledges to demonstrate his regret for his association with Epstein by supporting the fight against the evils of sex trafficking and supporting its victims. We haven't seen any evidence of that over recent years. Have we? We knew this wasn't over. We knew that the stripping him of his titles wasn't going to be the end of the matter. And we have swiftly heard from the House of Representatives Oversight Committee summoning him to give evidence. Now, they don't have the power to subpoena him because he is a foreigner. So it is up to Andrew and his team to decide whether or not he does this. He has to respond to them by November the 20th. But I think given his performance on News Night, and given the way he responded to that level of forensic questioning by Emily Maitlis, his advisers will be telling him it is not in his best interests to do this, no matter what he has said in the past.
Sarah, as you look on now, is it fair to say the dismantling, the degradation of Andrew is virtually complete now?
Oh, I think so. I mean, yesterday we had the confirmation that the letters patent have been issued and signed and that he is no longer a prince, that he is surrendering the lease on Royal Lodge and he will shortly begin his banishment to the Sandringham estate. But we are going to get more coming from the Oversight Committee. They are just one vote short of calling for a vote on opening up the Epstein files again. The Department for Justice had said in July that it was done, that there were no more co-conspirators to be found, and the Oversight Committee doesn't believe in that. And they've cited several pieces of evidence for wanting to call Andrew, not least his long-standing friendship with Epstein and the leak of that email showing that he was still in contact with him in 2011. The flight logs that showed that he'd travelled with Epstein and to Epstein's Island, for example, and also financial documents showing that he'd had a massage. And they say that it is Andrew's, they're effectively saying this is Andrew's duty to do this on behalf of the victims, something he personally, as you say, Nick, has pledged to do.
Royal commentator Sarah Houston, thanks for your input this morning, Sarah. 7:27, let's get your voices on the radio. Should he go? Emma in High Wycombe, what would your advice, or what, not advice, what would you like to see happen? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Hi, I'm first time caller. I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, there's nothing to be nervous about. I've been getting away with it for years, I'm sure. Nothing to worry about. What's the point you're going to make?
I think if he wants to redeem himself at all and do right by the victims, of course, he absolutely should go. I mean, nothing's going to happen to him. But I think it would show the public that he is on the right side of the...
Do you think, I mean, you're obviously a very fair-minded woman, Emma, because unfortunately I've been a journalist for so long, you kind of make your mind up straight away in this game. Do you think he could ever be rehabilitated? Suppose he goes, right? And he does the most blistering performance, and he proves what his tea and his legal team have said all the time. He was never involved in any inappropriate behaviour. And then he absolutely aces it in Washington. Do you think we'd start to see rehabilitate him in our eyes?
Wouldn't it? It would certainly be a start to a very long road. But I think for his own, I mean, I'm just thinking of if I was in that situation, which is
God forbid,
you know, obviously, I would. I think it's the most sensible thing. It's just the right thing to do.
I just want to tell you what it was claimed in an email that allegedly sent by Andrew to the dead paedophile with the words. It's claimed, quotes, keep in close touch and we'll play some more soon.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if I'm his legal advisor, and I said, well, if you did send that, Andrew, you are going to be asked forensic detail about what you mean by play. And I know you don't sweat because you've got a condition, but I think you might sweat a little bit in Washington.
Yes, yeah, good point. He may end up in a similar situation to the Emily Maitlis interview. But I think for his own moral.
Well, I think where you've done it is victims. If he is to show concern for the victims, and we can say there's no alleged victims, one woman took her life for God's sake. If he is to show concern, then that should perhaps direct his actions. Emma, you had nothing to worry about. You were brilliant. Now, how long have you been listening to this show, Emma?
Oh, years.
So it's taken you years to call me. Don't leave it so long again. Have yourself a great day and indeed weekend in High Wycombe. Emma, thank you for that. We'll take more calls on that. We will, of course, come back to our conversation about the football match as well later in the show. I promise you, I'm not even going to give you a clue as to who triumphed last night in Traitors, but I will be telling you or helping you how to spot a liar. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus,
I like a glass of wine when I'm doing the cooking. Don't I, Wall? Don't I like a glass of wine when I'm preparing the evening meal? Chips and egg.
From a maid in Upstairs Downstairs to Oscar nominated there for Shirley Valentine. Pauline Collins, a tremendous career. Sadly dies aged 85. We'll look back at that. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
A review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. It says black staff at the Metropolitan Police are labelled confrontational, while others are treated more leniently. Keir Starmer says he's angry and frustrated by wrongful prisoner releases. A search for Algerian sex offender Brahim Kadour Sharif is ongoing after he was freed in error from Wandsworth prison last week. And ITV has confirmed it's in talks with Sky over the sale of its media and entertainment business. If agreed, the deal could be worth up to £1.6 billion. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
An extended interview with Malala Yousafzai, the champion of girls' education, the Nobel Prize winner, but also the struggles she's had to face in her own life.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33. Let's get straight to breaking news in the world of the city and finance. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM, and I understand within the last few minutes there's been confirmation the sky is not the limit then for Comcast that owns Sky TV. What's the latest? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, that's right. Late last night, there was some breaking speculation, I suppose, at the time, that Sky's owner Comcast, the US giant, was looking to snap up ITV's channel. ITV, which operates in two divisions, it has its ITV Studios, which is what makes a lot of its content, and a lot of that content does very well and goes all over the world, and it has Media and Entertainment, which includes its channels and its streaming service. The reports now confirmed that ITV is in conversations with Comcast to buy Media and Entertainment. That would be its ITV1, ITV2, and its streaming service. Those have been struggling, and those have been pulling down the company, in contrast to the success of the ITV Studios. So the bit that they might be now looking to get rid of, for a cool £1.6 billion, we're told, would then leave them in a stronger position, is the rationale. And why is this all happening? Well, this is an exceptionally competitive space. The streaming services, the major US net streaming services, have been eating away at the commercial viability of many of these other channels, and consolidation really seems to be part of the answer to this. So Comcast took on Sky, now they're saying they want to take ITV in as well. So reports emerging last night, confirmed this morning by ITV, who said in a statement to the city that there can be no certainty as to the terms upon which any potential sale may be agreed, and they'll make further announcements in due course. And ITV is being advised on this mega deal by, among other banks, the boutique advisors at Robey Warshaw, which just happens to be where George Osborne now plies his trade. So he will be one of the suspects involved in this deal.
So talking about a potential value of around £1.6 billion, someone who could buy it literally hundreds of times over is the trillion-dollar man.
Elon Musk. I mean, I know people have pretty firm views on Elon Musk. I've got some pretty firm views on Elon Musk. But if you put to one side for a moment his sort of online ramblings and what it is he's done to a social media platform, he does continue to shape the world and arguably shape the future of the world in many other areas. He had his Tesla AGM yesterday. And as he himself said on the stage, most company AGMs are snooze fests, whereas he said ours is an absolute banger. And it was a bit more of a festival, really, and complete with dancing robots. But the headline news from the AGM is that the shareholders enthusiastically chanted his name and granted him the pay deal, which could be worth well over $1 trillion to him if he hits some fairly extraordinary targets. He has to take the value of Tesla from $1.5 trillion today to $8.5 trillion in value by 2035. And he must sell tens of millions of vehicles and deploy a million robo-taxis and all sorts of new metrics, which if he hits, already is the world's richest man with a fortune just under $500 billion, he will then receive his trillion-dollar paycheck, and then he can just slip off into the sunset and tweet all day.
All right. You were on the money again, May, yesterday. You thought the governor of the Bank of England or the committee would sit on its hands, and it did. Just remind listeners what that meant.
It was a very finely cast vote. 9 members of the Monetary Policy Committee, 8 voted to cut interest rates, 8 voted to hold them, and the governor had the final decision, and he said, oh, I think we should stick at 4%. So that's where they are. They also said that, look, the economy has undoubtedly been constrained by pre-budget tax speculation. Growth, they think, will be 1.4% this year, same again next year, pretty mediocre. They have said that they made absolutely no calculation about the impact of potential future tax rises. That's kind of hard to believe. And the fact of the matter is that if there is to be another interest rate cut up post-budget, maybe in December, maybe early next year, as much as the government would say that that's another great sign of an economy getting back to full health, the fact of the matter is that they probably do that cut because major tax rises, which will bear down on inflation, will also hamper growth. And so you cut interest rates then to try and stimulate the economy. And on that point about tax rises, I received some analysis from some economists in the city last night saying that if the Chancellor was to announce that she would cut, she would raise income taxes by 2p, but cut national insurance contributions by the same amount only for those under £50,000, then somebody earning 75 grand, Nick, will pay about another £1,000 in income tax. £125,000 salary, you'll pay about £1,500 more in income tax. And if you're on 150 grand, spare them a thought, you'll pay about another £2,500 a year in tax. And then last night, the Times reported that that is precisely what the Chancellor is planning to do and has told the OBR as much. So that's another whopper of speculation, albeit quite well-sourced, of tax rises to come.
Enjoy your weekend, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Thank you, taking us to 7:39. This is what you're saying on social media about the request from Congress for Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor to attend hearings there. Will in Saddleworth, regarding Andrew, let's back up a minute. In her book, Geneva Giffray makes all sorts of allegations about other people, including a rape when she passed out with pain not involving Andrew. Why does no one talk about that? Well, it is speculated, of course, that a number of world leaders were involved in those parties, or what was it? How did Andrew describe it? Have some fun again? Who knows? And I think the fact that you have a British royal is always going to dominate the headlines, but you are right. We are looking possibly at other, I stress, possibly other world leaders. Emma says Andrew needs to go to help the investigation. It would help rehabilitation of the other, of his character and for the others. Greg's in Hornchurch. Do you agree with that? He should be going. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Long time listener, first time caller. Pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Oh, lovely. Great having first timers. That's superb. Thank you so much. Do you think he should go?
Oh, one is he's got to go. Why would you not go? It's, as far as I can see, the only reason for him not to go is he's protecting other nefarious friends.
Yeah.
There's worse things to come out that he doesn't want to come in the limelight. I mean,
it's not like despite his protestations, unfortunately, the man was involved in a way that he's not as yet told us about.
Well, exactly that. So I think there's further embarrassment down the line, or he's got very powerful friends saying, you are not going to do this, we can make things worse for you. What reason does he not have to go, Nick? He's got.
Well, let me tread carefully. I'll say again, he has always denied his involvement, but if he were to appear, I will read you what I read to Emma before the news, this alleged email from him to the dead paedophile. Keep in close touch, we'll play some more soon. Again, if I'm a barrister appearing, or if I'm a Congress saying, I wonder if you'd like to elucidate, what do you mean by play? There's a world of pain. But same question I put to Emma, I'll put to you, Greg. If he goes, if he turns on a blistering performance and clearly demonstrates that he's been a bit of an oaf, but he's no sex fiend, he was innocent of that, would he be rehabilitated?
No, not at all. I don't think you can rehabilitate this man at all, mainly because we're in such a divided, polemic world now. We just come up with conspiracy theories as to why he's done that. He's been paid off, he's been bought off. You could have Jesus Christ himself coming down, standing in front of people these days, and people go, well, that's not him. That's not the Christ I know. So I don't think there's any redemption forward. I think it's the right thing to do, but
so
I don't think it needs to come back in.
What you just said is so powerful in this world of social media. No, he's not the real Jesus. It's like Monty Python. He's not the real. I am Jesus Christ. No, you're not. You're not the one I've seen on social media. Greg, that's a brilliant line. I shall probably borrow that and never credit you. Don't worry. Have yourself a great weekend, Greg. Thanks for that. 7:41. Let's go into the world of show business. Coming up later in the show, don't worry, I won't give it away, but Celebrity Traitors reportedly getting viewing figures of 10 million last night. How they'd know when the papers went to bed, I've no idea. But anyway, it is a blockbuster. I'll be telling you how to spot a liar. How do you manage to realise that you're being spun a line? That's later in the show. But staying with show business, we have to say farewell to someone who started as a downstairs maid, but went on to get an Oscar nomination.
That's right, Melandra, I'm going to Greece for the sex.
Sounds like a marvellous diet, love.
It's called the F-Plan. I like a glass of wine when I'm doing the cooking. Don't I like a glass of wine when I'm preparing the evening meal? Chips and egg.
It's Thursday. We have steak on Thursday. We always have steak on Thursday.
Well, all right, it's Thursday, but we're having chips and egg for a change. You like chips and egg?
On a Tuesday. I like chips and egg on a Tuesday. Today is Thursday.
I'll pretend it's Tuesday.
Where's my steak?
I give it the dog.
the irreplaceable and irrepressible Pauline Collins, who sadly has died aged 85, appearing opposite Bernard Hall in Shirley Valentine. Alexander Larman is journalist, author and theatre critic at The Critic and joins me now. It just occurred to me as I was listening there, Alexander, that this woman could play such a range of roles with just a genuine sort of groundedness, if there is such a word. Morning, Alexander.
Morning, Nick. Yes, I mean, it's a great shame that Pauline's died, but I think it's also a great shame that she suffered from Parkinson's for many years later in life, because actually, if you look at the two roles she's best known for, which I think are Shirley Valentine and the parlourmaid Sarah in Upstairs, Downstairs, in both roles, you see a remarkable degree of variation and a remarkable degree of versatility, because I think that one thing that's very interesting to remember about Pauline Collins is that she didn't necessarily come from a kind of RSC classical background that a lot of her contemporaries did, but she was every bit as compelling in terms of playing these characters and in terms of giving lived emotional truth as any Judi Dench or Maggie Smith. And I think that actually she should be taken more seriously as being in the top rank of great British actresses.
When you think, if I've got this right, Alexander, the origin of Shirley Valentine was a one-woman show, which was about two and something hours, which she did both in the West End and Broadway, both showing her. That takes one heck of a talent, Alexander.
Oh, yes, because obviously you have to be somebody who, I mean, any one-woman show is difficult, but the whole point of Shirley Valentine is she wasn't just playing Shirley, she was playing all the other parts as well.
Yeah.
So she had to convincingly embody her husband, her friend, her lover, and people like that. And to do so in this way that I think a lot of actresses today would really struggle shows just what absolute talent and absolute pro she was.
Grateful for your time, Alexander. Thank you. Alexander Larman is journalist, author, and theatre critic at The Critic, reflecting on the extraordinary career. I did say, of course, she earned an Oscar nomination for the 1989 film version of Shirley Valentine, the one-woman show in which she played all the parts. Just think on that for a second. Hailed both here in the West End and in Broadway. I should have said, she did get a BAFTA, by the way, for that, which is no mean feat. She sadly died, aged 85. Commiserations to her family and those who knew her. Coming up after the news, we'll hear from a government minister, indeed a secretary of state, actually, a drive for new social homes. But what constitutes a social home? And the BBC in crisis, probably about part 117.
Malcolm Mistry, who is involved in the research, says that the aged pregnant people, women, and those with pre-existing health conditions need to take precautions.
And there's an insight into what we do when we're reading a script. We're always about three words ahead of what you hear me say as I'm reading through. So if I get an email where suddenly they decide that Andrew is guilty, whoa, we'll change all of that. Or make suggestions about a serving prime minister. And you can see or hear, I'm so sorry, you can hear that. That brilliant newsreader, Martine Croxall, has now been upbraided for doing that and for rolling her eyes. But don't worry, you can completely doctor footage of President Trump for Panorama and nobody gives a jot. Welcome to the weird world of the BBC. Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. Sir Keir Starmer says the government must step up and fix the justice system after several prisoners were mistakenly released in recent weeks. And ITV says it's in talks with Sky over the sale of its media and entertainment business. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M4 eastbound, heading up towards Junction 10 at the A329M and then to 8-9 at Maidenhead. It's because a car was on fire and one lane is closed. On the M4 Heathrow Spur Road, there are delays southbound towards the airport because the Heathrow tunnels had to be closed both ways following an accident. In Acton, there are queues on Gunnersbury Lane both ways. That's following an accident. In fact, those queues go all the way back to the North Circular Road. The A3 is busy southbound, heading down towards Burnt Common. And that's because a lorry's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. On the Underground, no Metropolitan line between Baker Street and Aldgate. No service for the Piccadilly line as well between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge.
This is LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot.
like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet.
Whoa.
Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well, you're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Henry's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 minutes before eight, we might come back to our conversation about that football match in Birmingham and, of course, the demand by Congress for Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor to attend hearings in Washington. But let's come to events here back home. And the mayor's to set housing agenda will build more social and affordable homes for the first time, helped by £7 billion worth of funding. Well, that's the headline. Let's get more behind that with Labour MP and Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Steve Reid, who joins me now. Secretary of State, good to have you on. OK, let's break down. What is social and affordable housing? What is the metric by which that is judged? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. Well, we've got a housing crisis in this country. Everyone will know that we don't have enough housing of any tenure, whether to rent privately, whether people want to buy their own home. The dream of home ownership has been closed down, but we know we haven't invested enough in social, affordable and council housing for decades. And I see that in my own advice surgery. I'll be doing my advice surgery later on today. But people will come in and they will tell me that they've been waiting 10, 20 years for a council flat on a waiting list, and they're not going to get one because we're not building enough. So this government is investing the biggest amount of money in a generation in building new council housing so we can start to get the homes that people need to live in and start to tackle some of the manifestations of the housing crisis, such as the fact that the number of people sleeping rough on our streets, shivering in shop doorways, doubled under the previous government.
But what makes an affordable, or what makes a home an affordable? What is the price? How is that calculated?
Well, council housing is council housing or run by a housing association at what is called a social rent, which is a lower rent. Affordable housing is 80% of the market rents.
So it's an 80% cut effectively in the rental or the purchase price, is that
of
roughly
the market, of the private market in that locality? And I know that means it's still expensive in many areas.
Okay, so the £7 billion that's been secured, what will that provide for, Secretary of State?
Well, it would be going to mayors, it's important that, because it's not me that will be taking the decisions. It's the mayors up and down the country who know their own regions best, who know the pattern of need for housing in their localities, and they will choose what it will be going on in consultation with local authorities in their area. But okay. In particular, we want to see more council housing, more social housing. It may be that there are needs, a need for housing for older people with extra care on site, for disabled people, but they take the decisions, not me, and they put the bids into Homes England and they access the money once that's confirmed.
Time to channel my inner Sir Bruce Forsyth. You're too young to remember him, but it's
well,
time
not
for,
sadly.
It's time for scores on the front doors. Yep. How many new homes have been built since Labour came to power last year?
It's about 231,000 so far.
It's 231,300. All right, well done.
Well, there you go, Nick. I nearly got it. But if you look at
starts... But you're not going to hit your target of 1.5.
Well, we are, because it takes some time between putting in an application, getting planning consent, and then getting spades in the ground and having the home, you're not going to see them yet. They haven't started, but we've got a law going through Parliament right now that will get royal assent this side of Christmas to speed up the planning process. That means you put the application in, you get a decision quicker, you get your spades in the ground and you start to see the homes. Plus, we've got this money going in to invest in the council and social housing element of that. All of that helps to give the developers the confidence to go ahead and build. So we will build that 1.5 target of homes over the lifetime of this Parliament, because we have to deal with the housing crisis.
If you're still in post, if I'm still alive at the end of this term of Parliament, do you want a 100 quid bet and the money to go to a homeless charity shelter in Streatham and Croydon North? I don't think you're going to get it, and I'd happily put 100 quid towards your charity. You're going to put 100 quid bet with me?
If I'm still in post, Nick, and I hope I am.
I'm still alive, Mr. Reid.
I mean, I hope I don't get this from too many journalists, otherwise I'm going to potentially be out of pocket.
No, you could say... Hang on, you wouldn't be out of pocket, would you, Mr. Reid?
Potentially.
Oh, potentially, I'm sorry, I thought you said essentially. Right.
No.
Okay, well, that's the only bet you need to take. Let's move on to other matters, if we may. Does Andrew need to go to Washington?
Well, I think any individual that can help with an investigation of that gravity should go and help if they can. He is a private individual. It's up to him. But I think people should do what they can to help.
We have to come back to the problems concerning the release in error of certain prisoners. Yeah. And David Lammy's performance, as it were, at the House of Commons. The Conservatives are suggesting either he didn't know what was going on or he was lying. Which do you think it is?
Well, he's explained it himself. He didn't have the full facts at the time. And when you're Justice Secretary, you can't stand up and start pronouncing on individual cases when you don't know the facts. So I think he was right to hold back in those circumstances. Parliament's in recess now. It's not sitting today. It's not sitting Monday. The first opportunity he'll have to come to the House and take questions as he wants to is Tuesday, and that's what he's going to do, and rightly so.
The Daily Telegraph has analysis this morning that 90 violent or sex offenders have been mistakenly released from prison in the last year. That's the highest number ever, Mr. Reid. 8 times the figure for the previous year. Is something wrong with the government's early release scheme? Something's not working here, isn't it?
No, that there's something not working, but it's the criminal justice system. So when you've got, prisons up and down the country, tens of thousands of offenders in there, they're managed on paper-based systems because the previous government didn't invest to digitise it. And if you've got tens of thousands of bits of paper flying around, human error means that mistakes tragically are going to happen. The previous government didn't invest in any part of the prison system, not digitising that the release system, not in building the prison places we need, not investing in the police officers that we need, not investing in the courts. There were massive backlogs there as well. We are investing to fix all of them, but one of those investments will be to digitise the system so we know who is where and who's signing off their release. That will reduce the number of mistakes that are happening, but they have been happening for years, unfortunately.
Mr. Reid, before what will be your lengthy tenure as the Housing Secretary, you were Environment Secretary, I did as recently as September. What has been achieved by COP? The Prime Minister is there, I think your colleague Ed Miliband is there, and yet by many measures we hear we're actually going backwards in trying to control climate change. So what have 30 years of COP ever achieved?
Well, countries have failed to meet their obligations in too many cases to help reduce global warming. And we know that if global warming exceeds a certain limit, then it's going to cause more problems with rising sea levels, changing climates, more storms of the kind that we just saw battering Jamaica, smashing it to pieces. So we have to get the world focused. And if you don't have events where the world is brought together, then you will lose focus entirely. We can all see we need to do more. This government is committed to doing more, but this has to be a global effort, because we're all partners on the same planet here.
Last minute or so together, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson is suggesting the Director General of the BBC, Tim Davey, comes out of hiding and needs to explain or quit stories such as the doctoring of videotape concerning President Trump, and also rebuking a newsreader for rolling her eyes. Mr. Reid.
Well, I do believe in open accountability, and I know the DG of the BBC has appeared before select committees in the House of Commons before now, but every institution, and that includes the BBC, must be open and accountable.
Well, should we hear from him? Don't you think he needs to come out and say something? This crisis, you know as well as anyone, this crisis is not going to go away, Mr. Reid.
Well, I'd be surprised if he wasn't planning to say something, to be honest.
All right. Finally, Lucy Powell, the deputy leader, has warned the Prime Minister and the Chancellor breaching the party manifesto to pledge on taxes would damage trust in politics. Is she correct?
Well, we're delivering our manifesto. The reason you're seeing 5 million additional NHS appointments is because we committed to get waiting lists down, and that's what we're doing. The reason you saw the increase in the national minimum wage is because we promised to give Britain a pay rise, and that's what we're doing. So we're delivering the manifesto.
But you're a savvy bloke. We saw the Chancellor earlier this week. I would suggest paving the way for what will be some kind of tax increases, and you have your deputy leader saying, don't break the pledges given the manifesto, because, I say again, you will damage trust in politics. Is she right? If those raises were to go ahead?
Well, we can all speculate about what might be in the budget, but you know, I don't know any more than anyone else, and we'll find out in due course. But we are going to make the changes in this country that the public voted for.
I'm honestly not asking you to speculate what's in the budget. I'm saying that if those raises were to go ahead, when your colleague Lucy Powell says it would damage trust in politics, is she right?
Yeah, well, we're not damaging trust in politics. We're getting on and delivering the manifesto. That's important. But Rachel, the Chancellor, gave a speech a couple of days ago in which she said, we're not going back to austerity. We will invest. I've come on your show today and you've kindly asked me about the investment going into
housing. £7 billion. Yep.
That's not only ending the housing crisis, that's jobs as construction workers, builders, engineers, quantity surveyors up and down the country. That's how you get an economy moving.
Good luck to you and all your colleagues. £7 billion worth of funding to get the housing agenda moving towards more social and affordable homes. Thank you for your time. Steve Reid, Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary. Taking us to 8 o'clock here on LBC. Let's get those headlines. Dominic Ellis.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. It says black staff at the Metropolitan Police are labelled confrontational, while others are treated more leniently. Festus Akinbesoya is a former Tory police and crime commissioner. He's told LBC. Another report in 2019 found that the issue was already deep-rooted within the Met.
They too found across the board there was a disparity. And one of the reasons was that because the supervising officers did not want to be called racist when a complaint was made against a black or ethnic minority police officer, they were almost automatically escalated to a misconduct or gross misconduct process, whereas for white officers, they would deal with those complaints informally.
Scotland Yard says it recognises the scale of the challenge and that further change is needed. The Prime Minister says it's a matter for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor whether he agrees to an interview in the United States. A Congress committee has requested he gives evidence over his relationship with the paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein. It doesn't have the power to compel Andrew to appear, and he's always denied any wrongdoing. A cabinet minister's move to defend the Justice Secretary's response to the accidental release of prisoners. The Conservatives have accused David Lammy of failing to disclose what he knew about two men freed from Wandsworth Prison last week. Mr. Lammy says he wasn't equipped with all the detail and didn't want to mislead the public. The Housing Secretary Steve Reid's just told Nick Mr. Lammy's decision at Prime Minister's questions was justified.
He's explained it himself. He didn't have the full facts at the time. And when you're Justice Secretary, you can't stand up and start pronouncing on individual cases cases when you don't know the facts. So I think he was right to hold back in those circumstances. Parliament's in recess now. It's not sitting today. It's not sitting Monday. The first opportunity he'll have to come to the House and take questions as he wants to is Tuesday, and that's what he's going to do, and rightly so.
Searches are continuing for the Algerian sex offender Brahim Kadir Sharif, who remains on the run. 11 arrests have been made following protests around Maccabi Tel Aviv's match at Aston Villa last night. Away fans were banned from the Europa League game. Police say the decision was based on significant levels of hooliganism from Maccabi supporters' base in the past. And ITV has confirmed this morning that it's in talks with Sky over the sale of its media and entertainment business. If agreed, the deal could be worth up to £1.6 billion. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 97.36. It closed down 41 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across the UK today. Another mild day as well. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Mortgage 3 minutes after eight, Friday, the 7th of November. Come forward and explain or quit. That's Boris Johnson's message to Tim Davey, the Director General, the boss of the BBC, as they find themselves engulfed in yet more scandal or scandals. And I'll give you more detail on that. Also, problems for the police, the Met, the nation's largest force. A review suggesting that there is anti-black discrimination, quotes, baked into the Met. Well, speaking with me last month, Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley said his force had deep systemic issues when it comes to tackling racism, misogyny and homophobia.
I recognise, I've been really clear, that there are deep systemic issues that go back over decades, a whole pattern of things that have created a too comfortable environment that has created the volume of problem that we've been rooting out.
Due to the bungling incompetence of both the government and the opposition, Reform UK continues to soar in those polls. But what's it like to live with a local authority controlled by Reform?
Nine councillors chucked out, sweary Zoom meetings and a row over an erotic novel. How are Reform getting on with governing Kent? I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the latest.
Plus, tremendous music there. It does actually, we should say. So Sam Watts is the composer. It's Traitors. I'm not. Don't worry if you just joined me. Of course, I wouldn't dream. Unlike every national newspaper editor, I wouldn't dream of giving away who might have triumphed last night. But staying with that theme, as it's reported that more than 10 million of you watched last night, I'll be giving you tips how to spot a liar.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I mentioned it's the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson leading calls for Tim Davey, the BBC Director General, to explain or resign over the bias scandal engulfing the broadcaster. Other MPs have joined with him, saying he needs to, quote, Davey needs to come out of hiding after a week of disclosures by one newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, of one-sided reporting over Gaza. On one of their channels, someone who supports Hamas was appearing literally hundreds of times over a period, unchallenged with all his views. Quite extraordinary. Censorship of the trans debate. There is reportedly the LGBTQ plus desk at the BBC. And according to the whistleblower, the man who went there, Michael Prescott, former standards advisor, if it was a story that wasn't kind of, if it was counter to their narrative, they decided not to do it. I mean, that would be extraordinary. That would be like saying to a crime editor, right, we need this story where the Met or Jim, Greater Manchester Police, or whatever it might be, as foot. No, I don't really like that story. Sorry? No, I don't think we should do that. No, hang on. I'm the news editor, and the editor. No, we're not going to do it. It doesn't fit with our set. But they can go after a newsreader, but change it. And listen carefully. You can see, as Martin Croxall reads this script back in June, the brilliant Martin Croxall, by the way, doing exactly what she should have done. But her crime, never mind the fact that they've doctored Trump docos, a doctored doco, never mind they've had effectively turned one channel into the Hamas TV, never mind that. None of that matters at all. But have a newsreader roll her eyes? Oh, my God.
London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has released research which says that nearly 600 heat-related deaths are expected in the UK. Malcolm Mistry, who is involved in the research, says that the aged pregnant people, women, and those with pre-existing health conditions need to take precautions.
Marvellous, Martine. Go on. And I told you before that you can, a newsreader is always about 2 to 3 words ahead of what you're hearing. And you see a thing coming up on the script. Whoa, God, I'm not going to say that. I might faint instead. My career might ride on it. A few moments ago, not moments, I suppose a few minutes ago, in fairness, I asked Housing Secretary Steve Reid. He was the minister on the round. Did he agree with Mr. Johnson? Tim Davey needs to come out of hiding and explain some of these decisions.
Well, I do believe in open accountability, and I know the DG of the BBC has appeared before select committees in the House of Commons before now, but every institution, and that includes the BBC, must be open and accountable.
Well, should we hear from him? Don't you think he needs to come out and say something? This crisis, you know as well as anyone, this crisis is not going to go away, Mr. Reid.
Well, I'd be surprised if he wasn't planning to say something, to be honest.
Right, today's edition of the Daily Telegraph, there's most of the front page. And there are three what are called broadsheet pages devoted to this story. What does broadsheet mean? That's the bigger newspaper, not the tabloid. This reminds me of the days of the Telegraph expenses scandals from MPs. Do you remember that? Where you would wake up, you didn't have to. I would wake up in the morning and think, oh my God, this is like double physics for homework. I've got to read it all. But this is not going to be an easy read. And the level of detail is incredible as you go through. I know I'm rushing the newspaper. Absolutely incredible work done here by Michael Prescott. Now, one journalist who will appreciate just how many words it takes to fill three broadsheet pages is Adam Sherwin, arts and media correspondent for The Eye, who's been covering this story. Where do you want to go first? The call from Mr. Johnson to Mr. Davey, the move that's been made on that newsreader, the Trump doco. Adam, where do you want to start? Morning.
Morning. Well, let's start with Martine Croxall, maybe. It actually seems that the greatest offence that she committed, according to the censor that she received, was winning 50,000 more social media followers after she did that raised eyebrow and used the word women, because it was because that caused offence to another group of people that the complaints unit appeared to come down hard on her. You know, J.K. Rowling came out in her favour. So the fact that she wasn't an automaton and used a raised eyebrow and gave her opinion rather than the fact that she was stating a fact about biological women, that wasn't the problem. It was that she said something that gave the impression that she had a point of view. She won popularity for that, and that's what they didn't like.
What will be going on in the luxuriously carpeted corridors of the BBC now as these headlines continue to break?
Well, I suppose they wanted to be basking in the traitors and its massive viewing figures, but instead the pressure is mounting on Tim Davey to come out. We've got Michael Grade, the chairman of Ofcom. He's asking for answers. Michael Prescott, who compiled that dossier, is going before MPs at Select Committee next week. They'll be able to get more revelations from him. And it does appear that Tim Davey, who hasn't been seen publicly, is, and also the chairman of the BBC, Samir Shah, this affects him as well, that he had to respond to Michael Prescott's complaints. And that's probably the biggest problem that they've got, is that Michael Prescott is saying, just tell us why you didn't respond to these complaints. What did you do about them?
As you have your toast and marmalade, Adam, you will read through these three broadsheet pages. It is incredible the breadth and scope of bias, or I'm going to put to it, simple journalistic fails here. Why would it appear the BBC is riddled with this?
Well, the BBC will tell you, and Tim Davey will tell you, the hardest job he has at the moment is what he calls the culture wars. Whatever they say about Israel or Gaza, some group of people's going to complain. Trans ideology, one group of people will complain. So he's saying, we are always just trying to steer a middle ground of impartiality, but we're always going to offend one group or the other. But now they're going to have to actually come out and be accountable and say, look, we have standards, we have to keep to these standards. And in all these cases, the editing of the Trump video, the supposed bias against Israel, they're going to have to explain decisions and say how they share up to the BBC's values and the editorial guidelines. He's going to find that quite difficult, I think.
Lastly, how do you think the story might develop over the weekend or through next week, Adam?
I think we've got, it depends if the government starts putting pressure, particularly on Tim Davis and Samir Shah. Lisa Nandy has a very rocky relationship with Tim Davis. She was very critical of the BBC over Glastonbury and the Bob Villain broadcast. So I think the government is going to say to the top brass of the BBC, you thought you could just front this out. It was just a Daily Telegraph story, the right wing. But actually, this is a bigger situation for you now. You need to come out. And if you can't account for this, then some heads might have to roll.
Adam Sherwin is arts and media correspondent for The Eye. Thanks for your input, 11 after 8. Now, Adam decided to go with the aspect I'm going to explore now with Fiona McEnana, who is director of campaigns at Sex Matters and a former director of sport for Fair Play for Women. If I take you back to that bulletin and the newsreader deciding to effectively ad-lib a change to the script and roll her eyes, and now she's been upbraided for that. Your reaction, if I can, Fiona. Good morning.
Good morning. The most telling thing is that 50,000 people followed her on social media, and that's what the BBC should pay attention to for the right reasons. Everybody knows that there are men and women. Sometimes that matters. This nonsense of pretending that anyone can be pregnant, adopting this sort of language of gender ideology, has gone on for too long at the BBC. And that's the message they should be getting out of what happened here. The idea that they've censured her is rather worrying. It suggests they're just going to double down. But, you know, the world knows. We all see. We all know what reality is. And if we can't trust them on that, how can we trust them on anything?
There's a heck of a row going on within the BBC News Department, it would appear, Fiona. It's not your job to have read the Daily Telegraph, but it is mine. And it doesn't matter whether it's the coverage of Donald Trump, whether it's the coverage on the Arabic Channel. Let's go to one that would possibly interest you more, which, and I quote directly from the testimony here, the LGBTQ desk at the BBC. Mr. Prescott, effectively the whistleblower, director of standards, I was told that time and time again, the LGBTQ desk staffers would decline to cover any story raising difficult questions about the trans debate. Why is that, those attitudes? Why are they so deep-seated, you imagine, Fiona?
Well, and I can say we have come across that ourselves, Nick. It seems like their coverage is all about bigging up how wonderful it is to be transgender. They seem to want to recruit young people to identify out of their sex, which wouldn't matter if it didn't come with serious medical consequences. So I think it's a pretty irresponsible thing they do. But for some reason, and I don't know what it is, the BBC has become a sort of cheerleader for transgenderism, and they don't want to write anything that makes it look like perhaps sometimes a bad choice. For example, there have been many detransitioners, people who have regretted going down that path. They find it impossible to get any coverage of their story.
Lastly, he cites the typical example, the story of, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Gisele Shaw, these are his words, a gushing tale of a transgender wrestler who felt liberated by coming out. This story, posted on March 15, 2023, glossed over how the wrestler, who is a biological male, had repeatedly won trophies by competing in women's competition. That speaks to the points you were just making, doesn't it, Fiona?
Yeah, and it's so one-sided because, you know, this character may well be happy about the life choices he's made, but those choices have an impact on all the women who have to face him in wrestling. And this is happening right across the board. And the BBC seldom reports the experiences, the voices of women who have to face these men in sport. I mean, wrestling is particularly harmful, of course. So, of course, Gisele is happy with what he's done, but his impact is profoundly negative across the board. And I think that the Martine Croxall reaction tells you that everybody else knows it.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Fiona McEnana is Director of Campaigns at Sex Matters and was Director of Sport for Fair Play for Women. If you want to comment on that aspect, or Donald Trump, or the fact, of course, that now a former Prime Minister, and it would seem he's getting governmental support, current governmental support, that is, that Tim Davie needs to be dragged out of hiding, we'll get into that. Also coming up later in this hour, that concerning report that anti-black discrimination is baked into the Met Police. We'll have more on that. And to lighten the mood, as it's revealed that at the Louvre, the password for the video security surveillance system was Louvre. Yes, that's right. Just type in Louvre and you've got control of the cameras and you could make off with 88 million euros worth of art. I'll be asking you for your... I won't ask you for your password, but when you've forgotten them, how you choose them, your password panics and password moments later in the show. 8.15, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. The Prime Minister says it's a matter for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor whether he agrees to an interview in the United States.
and 11 arrests have been made following protests around Maccabi Tel Aviv's match at Aston Villa last night. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across the UK. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are big problems at Heathrow Airport because the Heathrow tunnels had to be closed both ways because of an accident. And now the Heathrow Spur Road has been closed all the way from the main M4 carriageway. It is causing severe delays, obviously, on the M4, but also on the Stockley Road around West Drayton and on the A4 as well through Harlington and Longford. So if you're heading that way to Heathrow Airport, do allow yourself extra time. Now, elsewhere, there are queues on the A3 southbound to Burnt Common. That's where a lorry has broken down. In Acton, there are delays on Gunnersbury Lane both ways following an accident. And on the Underground, there's still severe delays on the Central Line, and the Metropolitan and Piccadilly Line are part suspended.
LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £86 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits! Whoa.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Fishing. It's a wonderful way to spend an afternoon. But it could also be a huge threat to your business. Phishing emails are scams that trick you into giving away vital data, putting your company at risk. So how do you make sure you don't get caught, hook, line and sinker? Just ask BT. Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
You asked, BT answered.
With phishing, awareness makes all the difference. Train your staff to spot suspicious emails and encourage them to slow down. Hackers rely on you being in a rush, so slowing down decreases your risk.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8, this is what you're saying. Coming to you, Monica, as the first caller in a moment. Ben says, for decades now, British Jews have been complaining about the BBC and its ingrained bias against Israel. Well, you do want to read this report. This guy, Mr. Prescott, who worked as an ethics advisor there, he is pretty devastating. Take the word out. He is devastating in his critique, particularly in that area, and the amount of opportunities that were afforded to a Hamas spokesman. Same subject. This comes in from John. It has ever been like this. I thought successive director generals were going to say that they would tidy this up and put the news department right. I think it's simply out of control. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Monica in Richmond, what do you want to say about this latest crisis? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just think you're focusing in on the BBC, but I think this problem is much wider than the BBC, and you're very guilty of this yourself.
Okay. In what way?
I'll give you an example. After the Four Women Scotland judgment in April...
After the what judgment? Sorry, the what? The which? The...
Sorry, beg your pardon. The Supreme Court judgment, the Four Women Scotland
judgment. I remember that story. Yep.
You had Susan Smith, one of the three women that were involved in it, and you admonished her for using for not using preferred pronouns, so she, her, for women.
Right.
Now, this woman had three women sat around their kitchen table, took on the Scottish government, took it all the way to the Supreme Court,
right,
and won. And you had and you wanted to tell her off for using factual language about women. So my issue, you've got these, in the media, you've got these young, ideological, just out of uni types, and then
well,
you've
that's
got
not
men,
me, or any of the above.
And then you've got men like yourself.
Just about going to a care home, not coming out of university, but anyway, go.
You've got men like yourself that think of trans people as older transsexuals, the sort of true.
No. I've never. That's a little unfair, Monica. I've never identified trans people in that fashion. I've never suggested that, and I can hear myself in months and years past having enormous sympathy for someone, and I have said I don't think it's at quite the level that people believe it is, but of course I believe that someone could be born in effectively the wrong body. Of course I believe that.
Oh, come off it, Nick. How is someone born in the wrong body? That's a ridiculous thing. No one.
Just to use an example, I'm not. But if I was born and I wanted to be a woman and I identified as a woman then I absolutely believe that in a small percentage of people that could be true. Yes, absolutely.
What do you mean you identify as a woman?
You don't believe.
What does that mean?
Well,
identify as a woman.
Yeah, gender dysmorphia is what it's called, Monica. It is an accepted condition, and I totally and utterly buy it. Of course.
Can I just come back?
So
gender dysphoria, that doesn't make them born in the wrong body. Someone with anorexia, because they've got body dysphoria, doesn't make them fat. If it's a mental condition, then fine, we treat it as a mental condition. We don't treat them by saying they are born in the wrong body. That's an outrageous thing. What do you mean by someone identifies as the other gender? What do you mean?
Because the sex they were effectively assigned at birth is not the sex that they believe the gender is.
Oh,
not the sex,
come off it, Nick. No one's assigned at birth. No one's assigned at birth.
I just think we have to politely disagree on this one. And I absolutely respect your position, of course I do. But I'm going to hold with my position that what is recognised as a condition, gender disorder, does exist, Monica. And I appreciate you don't think it does, but I don't think we're just going to go around in circles here, really, aren't we?
Well, when you criticise the BBC, you need to take a long, hard look at how you report it yourself, I'm afraid.
Okay, no, that's very fair. I take that on board, Monica, thank you. And for goodness sake, I'm not pretending. Some of my reporting in my career has been absolutely woeful. But, I don't employ thousands of journalists in bureaus all around the world paid for by you. And if you don't pay me, you go to jail. That's not how my journalistic life has been. Monica, I really enjoyed our conversation. Have a safe one in Richmond. 8:23. Let's go to other stories. And one you've heard on the LBC News bulletins. Britain's biggest police force has persistently reframed racism to deflect scrutiny instead of tackling it within the ranks, a review has concluded. Perhaps the most damaging line, anti-black discrimination is baked into the institutional design. Those are 5 telling words, baked into the institutional design of the Met. Last month, I was speaking with the Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, following the broadcast of that documentary into the behaviour of officers at Charing Cross Police Station. He told me then there are long-term issues in the job about racism, misogyny and homophobia.
The most important thing is I recognise, I've been really clear, that there are deep systemic issues that go back over decades, that not just failures in regulations, failures in leadership, failures in culture, failures in vetting, a whole pattern of things that have created a too comfortable environment that has created the volume of problem that we've been rooting out. But we're showing as an organisation how determined we are. And the fact I've got 1,400 men and women who've stepped forward in recent years to report their colleagues shows how collectively determined we are to deal with this.
Neil Basu served at the top of the Met. He, of course, is co-host of the global podcast, The Crime Agents. He also wrote the book Turmoil, 30 Years of Policing, Politics and Prejudice, which allows me, and I know him well enough to call him Neil, to ask you, Neil, is that the Met you recognise and you served in? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm afraid it is. And Sir Mark knows that as well. So a bit of credit is due to the bravery of the Met in actually commissioning this report themselves and then releasing it unedited and in full. That quite surprises me, but it is, I think the report says it's effectively an admission that they want to be anti-racist, but they don't know how to get there. And we keep conflating two issues, Nick. We keep conflating individual racist behaviour by officers, which Sir Mark is quite rightly hammering down on and trying to get rid of those officers. That is just par for the course. You don't get credit for that. That's just what you should be doing. But individual racism is not what this report is about. If they wanted to understand what systemic, as Mark calls it, institutional, as I call it, they wanted to understand what it is and why the Met is still in this position many, many decades, 41 years after Scarman, 26 years since the McPherson inquiry, 5 years since George Floyd, 2 years since Louise Casey. If you want to understand why that continually happens, then you need to read this report.
As a former top copper, how did it display itself to you as you worked your way through the ranks, Neil?
Well, if you look at, I mean, it's quite, I think the modern word is triggering to read this report, if you happen to be me, because one of the things Dr. Daniels points out is there should be no hierarchy in bigotry. You know, all bigotry and prejudice is absolutely abhorrent. But unfortunately, there is. And if you are black, it is worse for you in society and worse for you in terms of the way you're treated by the police or the way you're treated as a police officer inside the force. Without a doubt, the lighter you are, the less racism you seem to get. And I'm 50, nearly 58 years old. You know, I've experienced that my entire career. And in fact, one of my own mentees used to describe me as the whitest one. That's why I was getting on. So there is a little bit of that. But the serious point to make here is, and I hope, and I know Sir Mark and I know his entire management board really well. None of them are racist. Every single one of them wants to deal with this problem. They just don't know how. So reading this report is important. But what they need to do is listen to the experiences of their staff associations, their race and faith associations, the Black Association, Muslims, Sikhs, Jews. Get them all in a room together as one, telling them what their experience is like. And I think if the management board does that and the whole board listens and then does exactly the same thing with the top 300 leaders in the Met, because these are the people making the decisions. So the problem you've got with institutional is the decision makers are white. So the people in charge of vetting, recruitment, promotion, discipline, human resources, the people in charge of those decisions are white. And whether it's conscious or unconscious, you inevitably end up with disproportionate outcomes. And it's why the Met can't fix it.
Lastly, you have a niece or a nephew who is non-white ring you up and say, Uncle Neil, I'm thinking of going into the job. I'm thinking of going into the Met. How would you respond?
Oh, please do. I'm incredibly proud of my career. I'm incredibly proud of policing. But I'll repeat what the first president of the Black Police Officers Association said to me in 1999, you can't row the boat from the shore. If you appreciate what I've just said, join, get to the top and change it. But you'll change it just by being there every day and changing your colleagues' perceptions of what being black or brown and a proud police officer actually is.
Catch Neil Basu on the Global podcast, The Crime Agents. Thanks, Neil, your former assistant commissioner of the Met. You wrote Turmoil, 30 Years of Policing, Politics and Prejudice. The Dr. Daniels to whom he referred is Shireen Daniels, managing director of HR Rewired, the consultancy that led the internal review, just to put that in perspective. We come back to another row engulfing a national institution. This is the BBC. Kath's in Scarborough. Kath, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Sorry, I've had a stroke, so I speak with a slur.
Yeah, of
so
course.
I hope you can understand me.
You go at your own pace.
My youngest is a trans woman now.
Right. Yeah.
I wholeheartedly think, regarding trans and other issues, that things should be neutral regarding toilets, changing rooms, whatever. People are people at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Don't change who they are. And when it comes to professions and sports, I have a slightly different view on it. I do think the body you're born in does count. I struggle with the pronouns, and
how old is your daughter?
I can't call her my daughter because she's not my daughter. My youngest is now in the 20s.
I'm confused. Please, I wasn't trying to be rude here. Sorry, your youngest was born a woman in this.
A boy. He's my son, or was my son, but he's now identifying. He's going through transition as a trans woman. But I only discovered that a couple of years ago.
And when it is complete, will this person then be your daughter, or will you still call them your son?
I don't call them. I call them my youngest. I can't get to grips with it. I struggle with the pronouns and things. As far as anyone else goes in the world, his partner now is a trans woman. I've not met them yet, but I'll have no problem identifying them by the name they're going by now. I have no problem with the name change. I have no problem with the body changes.
Right.
But I do have a problem with the pronouns and the fact that...
So you don't mind the body changes, you don't like it going from, let me get this right way around, he to she. That's the problem you have, that's the issue.
Yeah, I have a problem with the pronouns, because I've still...
this person, any individual problems. Lastly, Kath, how widespread is understanding of what your youngest is going through, would you say?
I'd say it's getting better. I'm 57 and I'm struggling with, I struggled with it a little bit, but I don't think of myself as prejudiced, and I'm understanding it more and more the more I talk to Tam.
And what's the biggest, let's try not to use names actually, if you don't mind, what's the biggest challenge for you watching your, watching your son decide that they want to live as a woman? What's the biggest challenge?
I suppose acceptance of it for me, it's just as basic as that. I didn't realise I'd struggle with it as much as I do. I watch programmes on TV and things like, you know, and I'm perfectly accepted, but when it comes to real flesh and blood, I struggle with the understanding. I accept it.
Yes, but it's the understanding. Kath, thank you for sharing so much. Best wishes to your youngest, as you choose to call them. We shall return to this conversation. In other news, as Reform UK continues to dominate those political polls, what would it be like having them running your local authority?
How do you think they're getting on?
Rubbish. Well, nothing's done, is it?
I believe they're doing okay, yeah.
How do I think they're getting on? Well, I've seen the video. They clearly don't know what they're doing. Well, I think it just shows a bunch of incompetent people who don't know what they're doing.
LBC's Henry Riley went to the Garden of England, the county of Kent, to find out things are not necessarily rosy in the garden. 8:32, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
A report has concluded discrimination against black people is baked into the culture and leadership of Britain's biggest police force. The Internal Review has called for structural change at the Metropolitan Police. A cabinet minister has told Nick that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should seriously consider a request to interview in the US. A Congress committee has appealed to Andrew to give evidence over his friendship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And 11 arrests have been made during protests around Maccabi Tel Aviv's match at Aston Villa last night. The Israeli side's fans were banned from attending the game over public safety concerns. LBC weather, sunshine and showers moving across the UK. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
If I want to nip 50 yards down the road in my electric car to go and buy some bacon, I'm going to go and do it. I shouldn't be charged for the privilege of it because I'm already paying taxes for the roads that are being used and I'm already paying a fortune in subsidies that the government have charged on my electricity bill to charge the damn thing. Get out of my way, leave me alone, I'm coming through.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to your call, Lucy, about the BBC scandal. There's no shortage, of course, of issues that they are, with which they are beset, but I think it's the trans debate you want to talk about, Lucy, and we'll come to you in just a moment. But I have mentioned a couple of times, it occurred to me, as Reform time after time after time do so well in the polls, and we recall their successes in the local elections, what is life actually like if you live in an area and you have them as your local authority? Because obviously if they want to govern nationally, then one would hope that they can govern fairly competently locally. But Reform UK have been accused of a Monty Python-style farce on Kent County Council. Two of their expelled councillors have formed a rival independent reformers group, the IRG. and the party's so far lost 15% of the councillors it elected just in May. So LBC's Henry Riley decided to go down to God's own land, the Garden of England, and find out what's going on. He's in the studio now. Henry, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the Garden of England was very much the top of Nigel Farage's ambition 6 months ago during those local elections. And Reform romped home in Kent. They won 57 out of 81 seats. It was seen as a blueprint for how the party would govern, very much the shop window for Reform. Just days after they won the election, Zia Yusuf and the party's Doge team arrived. That's the Department of Government Efficiency, a la Elon Musk-style cuts. And this was my conversation with Zia Yusuf back in May.
It was an extremely productive meeting this morning. Myself, it was a Reform head of Doge. We had the council leader for Reform, Lyndon Kemp-Caron. Everybody got to know each other. It's clear everybody's aligning towards the goal. We're starting here in Kent because it is the largest budget amongst the 10 councils that Reform controls.
But the days following that were fraught with difficulties. Zia Yusuf resigned later that week, and the head of Doge after 2 days, Nathaniel Freed, also left. Since then, Reform UK have lost 15% of their councillors on Kent, with the leader, Lyndon Kemp-Caron, taking decisive action, mostly due to the infamous Zoom gate.
Sometimes I will make a decision that might not be liked by everybody in the group, but I'm afraid you're just going to have to suck it up, OK? Because I am the democratically elected leader. I'm going to be on bloody holiday this week,
right.
Paul.
Okay,
I don't want to be having this meeting.
Right. What the proposal is...
Yes. Paul, yeah. I'm going to mute you in a minute. Let me reply.
It's all right, Brian. You keep laughing your head off, mate.
In the committee meeting, Paul, I'm going to mute you.
And Brian is the deputy leader, by the way. They've lost one of their elected members on Kent.
Sounds like the newsroom.
They've lost one of their elected members on Kent every 21 days. Yesterday, before the council meeting, they lost another one. Isabella Kemp, who's the ninth councillor Reform have lost on Kent. She was actually Reform UK's data protection officer, the main party, so she's lost that job too. One's joined UKIP, one is suspended, five have been kicked out, two have joined the IRG, as you say, the Independent Reformers Group, founded by Bill Barrett and Robert Ford. And Robert Ford explained how he felt he'd been bullied due to an erotic novel.
I'm currently taking legal advice regarding defamation of my character that occurred on October the 13th. I intend in the coming months to pursue this with vigour. A few days ago, I discovered so-called complaints against me, all relating to my novel writing. It's astonishing that my name can be defamed simply because I wrote an erotic novel and got it published by a major company. And I then mentioned it to a few people in the building behind me.
50 shades of dismay, it sounds like, down there, doesn't it?
Now, there is a challenging economic situation in Kent they've inherited. They have overspent, but they are by no means the worst offenders. They have slashed their allowances, the councillors, by 5% to save money. Yesterday was the first full meeting since Zoomgate. This is how things panned out.
9.8 million people come into our country. Is there any reason people like me are leaving the Conservatives in droves and going over to Reform UK?
Don't keep shushing me.
No, I'll take the point of order at the end. Thank you.
But, Mr. Chairman,
that's not how it works.
You don't tell the chairman to shush. That's totally wrong.
I wasn't talking...
Well, I'll take the point of order at the end.
Don't worry. Forget it.
Suddenly, David Lammy looks like a political superstar, doesn't he?
It's quite the link, isn't there? Despite the chaos, Reform claim that they, in terms of successes, have filled 22,000 potholes and they've repaired 250,000 square miles of road. They also moved a transgender book from a front-facing section of the library, which they very much championed. But as you said, it hit the streets of Maidstone a few days ago to ask residents what they made of all of this.
How do you think they're getting on?
Rubbish. Well, nothing's done, is it?
I believe they're doing okay, yeah.
Yeah? So, I mean, did you vote Reform, do you mind me asking?
Yes, I did.
And you regret it?
Yeah, big time. It's just mugging people, isn't it, really? Taking their money and we're getting nothing for it.
How do you think Reform are doing in Kent?
Very well.
And what is it in particular you're liking?
Well, just succeed, really, and just get rid of all the problems people have.
And what sort of problems are they in this area in particular?
Well, I think crime and potholes. I know it's stupid things to say.
Sorting the roads out,
potholes.
Yeah, big potholes.
It's a new council, obviously, it's reform. Have they made a difference, for better or worse?
Worse.
How do I think they're getting on? Well, I've seen the video. They clearly don't know what they're doing.
Is this in relation to the Zoom video?
Yeah. Well, I think it just shows a bunch of incompetent people who don't know what they're doing. All the big promises have failed to deliver.
6 months in, they've got another 4.5 years to go.
I can't wait for Nigel Farage to come in again, phone Farage and take your calls. I would imagine we'll get a few from Kent. Henry Riley, LBC's Henry Riley, with that blistering report from the Garden of England. You might want to comment on that, particularly if you are in God's own land of Kent. Do let me know. But Lucy's in Brixton to talk about that BBC story we're doing at 8:41. Lucy, what do you take from that report? Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you for holding. Appreciate it.
I kind of just wanted to sort of echo what a previous caller said. Just, I'm so glad this is being picked up. It's like, I think it's about 10 years now. It's been almost a decade that I've kind of been interested in this. And, you know, it's not just the BBC. Like, all the media have dropped the ball with this, to be quite honest. There's not been...
I'm going to press you a little bit. Drop what ball? And what aspect of the ball has been dropped? I just need a bit more detail.
Putting both sides across, to be honest, like what someone said earlier, you know, detransitioners have not had a look in. The very fact that, you know, all of the coverage has been essentially what that lady earlier said, you know, it's like it's pushing trans.
Yes. Well,
it doesn't ever...
Yeah, if you read the testimony by the whistleblower, the man who was the former standards advisor, Michael Prescott, that's exactly what's going on. They won't do stories that do not fit their narrative. Plain and simple.
Right? And I think when such huge things are at stake here, you know, it's children. Like, it's children transitioning. It doesn't come with, you know, no problems.
No, indeed.
There are lots and lots of health issues with transition. There's also still, you know, a lot of questions about whether transition is still the best thing, to be quite honest. Lots of people do detransition, and that's not really spoken about.
Well, you see, now, I think you've put your finger on it. Because I'll read again from this report, the desk, and that's what they call an area that controls reporters or a various issues. So I'll have a crime desk, I'll have a politics desk. The desk, the LGBTQ desk, and now I read, had been captured by a small group of people promoting the Stonewall view of the debate and keeping other perspectives off air. Individual programmes had come to lack their own reporters as a counterweight. And that's where you're right, Lucy, because as a state-funded broadcaster, they have to represent other views. They cannot simply say, trans is absolutely done, the conversation is over, it's a great thing. You have to reflect the argument with people, as we hear from callers here, well, no, actually, there is another approach to this. And that's what we're not getting, Lucy.
100%. And more than that, you know, it hasn't just happened in the BBC. This has happened everywhere. It's happened with the police. It's happened with the school system.
Yep.
You know, a very small number of activists have kind of, you know, infiltrated, and they've taken over and they've pushed this party line. I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about pronouns earlier that you see it as like, oh, it's just polite. It's just being nice. Yeah?
Yeah. Well, is it... Okay.
Gender-critical.
Yeah, is it not, though, if...
Look, can I make my point? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, what you have to look at it is, it's adherence to a religion, right? You can believe that people are born in the wrong bodies. That's fine. Like, I'm not a religious person. I don't believe in
souls. You don't believe in
Jesus. I don't believe that a male soul can be born in a female soul.
Can I just ask you, do you believe in...
Yep.
Believe in, gosh. Do you think gender dysphoria exists?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Gender dysphoria. I've got lots of friends who've got gender dysphoria.
Right.
But they're old school trans. They don't think that makes them the other sex. Like, they're not idiots.
Right.
They know that they have a medical condition, and so they have treatment to help with it. But this idea that you can be born in the wrong body, like, it makes no sense. And I just think we need to get away from that. And there's no other religion. Like, I've got friends who are Catholics. I've got friends who are Muslims. I've got no of my friends say I have to believe in their God in order for me to be friends with them.
But I don't know that we want to elevate this to this, perhaps the same level of religion. I see that you are, Lucy, but I don't know if others would subscribe to that. I need to get to the news. I've enjoyed our conversation, and thank you for holding on the line. Claire, you'll be the next caller if we can get to you on this, but it will be after the news. And then in the next hour, to La Belle France. As it is revealed that the password for the Louvre's video surveillance system and security was the word Louvre, and thieves stole 88 million euros worth of art treasures, I'll be asking you about your password pitfalls and the problems you've had. That's in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
A review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. A cabinet minister has told Nick that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should carefully consider an interview request in the United States. And three men have been charged with murder following the death of an inmate at Wakefield Prison. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across the UK, another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 Heathrow Spur Road's back open now southbound from the main M4 to the terminals, and the Heathrow Tunnel's also back open, but there are still severe delays in the area, especially through West Drayton, Harlingford and Longford. In Acton, Gunnersbury Lane is now closed in both directions, and that's causing delays back to the North Circular Road at Gunnersbury Park and also back to the High Street. Very busy on the A3 southbound to Burnt Common. A lorry's broken down and one lane is closed. Also, severe delays on Whitechapel High Street going northbound up to Aldgate East Station. And that's because of the roadworks. And on the underground, the district line is suspended between Turnham Green and Richmond.
This is LBC.
Do you want to stay active but feel the need to slow down? New 7Seas Joint Care Plus Turmeric contains a capsule filled with the UK's number one omega-3, combined with glucosamine and a tablet containing turmeric. Plus vitamin C to support cartilage, D for the maintenance of bones and muscles, and manganese to support connective tissue. To support your active lifestyle, try 7Seas Joint Care today. Food supplements must not substitute a balanced diet and healthy lifestyle. Verify at 7seas.co.uk.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
So... what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. All wobbly. All wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home. That was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Message Nick Ferrari on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
Our conversation about the BBC and its failings has moved us to a really quite a lengthy conversation about the trans issues because of the work of the so-called LGBTQ desk at the BBC, as in the report written, of course, in the today's newspaper. Just give you a couple of notes on that, then Claire coming to you in just a moment. Caroline says, what people identify is up to them, but that should not impact the rights of women, including their right to talk about the reality of their female biology. Trying to silence women in that way is Victorian. Neil in Liverpool, a colleague's sister is a teacher, and the daily challenge for her is she has teenagers coming into school identifying as different gender. One day they're male, the following they're female, and they feel triggered if you misgender them. It is not a medical condition. You can't have cancer one day and not have it another day. Social media is driving this, and it's destroying so many lives. I agree with all of that, but I also agree that emotionally, and I hope you can all agree, emotionally, someone can believe that they are the wrong gender. They can. Now, whether they are or whether they're not, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, and it's down to them. But we must accept that. Meanwhile, more generally, Mark Sells in Cambridgeshire says, I think we should all agree that if you don't pay your licence fee, you can't watch BBC output. Surely, though, it's wrong to prohibit watching other stations for those who don't want to find the BBC's mostly leftist output. Nick, how would you feel if you had told you had to pay an annual fee to Coventry City in order to be able to watch Leicester City? I don't really want to watch either of them at the moment. It's a tale of woe, I'm afraid, for the Foxes, but that's for another day. Claire's in Gloucester. Claire, your reaction to what we're learning about the inner workings of the mighty Beeb. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been very distressed by their anti-Israel bias,
yep.
In my view.
Yep.
I've been very distressed by their anti-Semitism, in my view.
Right.
I was horrified, as supposedly a news outlet, that they could actually doctor comments by President Trump.
Yeah.
And then nothing happens about that. They come out with some mealy-mouthed comment about the many views and blah, blah.
We don't discuss leaks, but we always welcome criticisms, is roughly what they say. Extraordinary.
But this, and then to sanction that newsreader, Martine Croxall.
Absolutely it is.
Sanction her,
yep.
Rolling her eyes, because, and saying pregnant women, because...
Yep.
Anyone with half a brain knows that. I mean, unless science moves on, at the moment, men, trans, whatever, cannot be pregnant.
Well, I'm fairly confident of that.
I am not paying for this anymore. I've got various things to do today, but when I get home late this afternoon, this evening, I will be going online and working out how to cancel my licence fee. I don't watch their live output at all.
Right.
I'm going to vote with my purse, I'm afraid. I'm not paying for this anymore.
But you know you won't be able to watch any... Just to clarify, you won't be able to watch any live television.
That's not a problem.
I don't think you'd be able to... Sky Plus or, I don't know what else, videotape, I don't know. I don't think you'd be able to tape it either. So, for instance, and I'm not going to give it away, but if you are a fan of Traitors, you wouldn't be able to watch Who Won It. Or you will now, in the future. Would that be an issue?
No, it won't be an issue. I don't watch their output, really. I've been turning their news off for some years. I don't watch anything on the BBC. I watch stuff online.
Okay.
Not live. So it won't make any difference to me at all. But to be honest, the only reason I haven't cancelled it before was because it's a faff to do it.
So the final straw, then, has been this 8,000-word letter sent by the former standards advisor at the BBC, Michael Prescott, to the members of the BBC board, all of which, by the way, is published in the paper today. That's the final straw. Quite a weight.
The final straw is the sanctioning of that newsreader. I'm up with this. I will not put. I think this is ridiculous. I'm fed up with their bias about Israel. And I'm not Jewish, by the way.
Right.
I've never been to Israel, but I'm fed up with their bias.
Right.
And I am not paying for it anymore.
And when you get home, you're going to do it. All right, Claire, I need to obviously advise you. Be very careful what you do watch on TV now. I know you can't tape things or whatever else, but... You have every right to act in that fashion as long as you take care of accompanying businesses. Thank you for that, Claire. Let's go. Now, this is interesting because we were already going to talk to someone who worked within the BBC in fairly senior roles, producer, news editor, commissioning editor, and senior manager. So it leads me neatly into my next conversation with Fiona Chesterton. Now, Fiona, of course, not just a long career at the BBC, also worked in senior positions at Channel 4 and indeed was awarded an RTS, Royal Television Society Fellowship, for her services to broadcasting. The book is called Not... The Token Woman, and charts Fiona's life at the BBC from the years 1975 to 1992. And I suppose I need to declare a sort of personal interest. I caught up with Fiona in the saddest of circumstances in that we both attended John Stapleton's funeral just a few weeks ago, I think it was. And I found out that Fiona worked for one of my late brothers at the BBC as well, and Fiona Chesterton joins us now. We'll talk about your book in just a moment, but you're not quite a BBC lifer, but you certainly put in a few years there. As you wake up each morning and you hear on the news or you read in the papers yet more headlines and damaging stories, how do they strike you, Fiona? Morning.
Well, I groan when I see the BBC being bashed virtually daily now in the press. Believe me, I'm just a viewer now. I'm not speaking on behalf of the BBC, but I would say this. Firstly, you'll miss the BBC when it's gone. And a lot of people ultimately are wanting to destroy the BBC. And I think it's a really important British institution. It's got massive flaws. It needs reform. Nobody's denying that. But honestly, I will defend it always as essential to our culture. And the second thing, I think, is that I don't want to get into any of the specific debates you've had today, but I also want to say it's really interesting that on the same day you've reported that ITV may be being bought by a company which is ultimately owned in the United States of America. And the BBC remains British property. British licence fee payers own the BBC or the corporation. And I do think we should bear that news in mind as well today as something we need to think about.
Fiona, let's take you to the book now. 50 years ago, you walk into a BBC newsroom. I'm a few years younger than I walked into newspaper newsrooms roughly the same time. Describe what it was like as being a woman walking into a TV newsroom in the mid-70s.
Well, the first thing you noticed were there weren't many women. In newsrooms, radio as well as TV, which I visited as a trainee back in the 70s, it was not unusual. In fact, it was almost the norm to be the one woman journalist in the room. That has changed massively in the last 50 years, but it hasn't been easy. It's taken a long time. And in the course of my career, I found a lot of challenges, but I also was determined to progress. And I progressed primarily in a department of the BBC where your late brother worked, in Lime Grove Studios, which were separate from news back in the 70s and 80s, and had an independent spirit. And there was a, it was a really creative part of the BBC. And we had a lot of fun, but we also did a huge range of programmes from Panorama to Nationwide, which is a programme that I think some of your listeners will remember. We did pioneering consumer programmes. Again, your late brother was involved in those.
Watchdog, exactly.
Yeah. And Watchdog span out of Nationwide.
Yeah.
So I describe in my book really the ups and downs, and what I found from my own personal experience. It's not an attempt to be a comprehensive history of Lime Grove or the BBC. No. Not at all. It is my memoir. And I'm wearing purple today because I'm at an age now where I can speak my mind. I really can speak my mind.
Let me ask you, and there is no measure for this, but how much tougher did a young woman have to be to get on in that world than a contemporary who was a young bloke?
Well, yes, tough, determined, yes. Women sometimes approach challenges in different ways from men. You're not always just standing having a, you know, a fight about something. Mm. You know, you have different ways to try and get on. But also, I would say, I met not so long ago one of the male trainees at a reunion meeting who was a very non-macho sort of man, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And he said the bullying he experienced, he found really, really difficult to deal with. And so he said it wasn't just the women who found themselves in difficult situations. I mean, you'll remember, Nick, from your experience in Fleet Street, that the culture was very different then. And one thing I bring out in the book, I think, which was served as a way of excluding women often, was the drinking culture.
Yes.
I describe how when I went to work for BBC Radio Sheffield as a trainee, not only was I berated for being a southerner, even though I come from Leicester in the Midlands, as you know well.
Yes, indeed.
But also the men went to the pub at lunchtime, and women were often in those days not allowed to go into pubs.
And that's where I must leave it, Fiona. You'll understand as a broadcast journalist that I have to get to the news. You're right, men used to go to the pub, Fleet Street, at lunchtime. In many cases, they never came back, but I sense they might have done a bit more at the BBC. The book, Not the Token Woman, My BBC Life, Fiona Chesterton. It's out now. It's published by Bite Sized Books. Fiona, good to talk to you. Look after yourself. Coming up after the news, the allegation that the parents of the Southport killer failed. Chris Walker, lawyer acting for the Southport bereaved family, said
Families want disciplinary action. They want sackings. This can't be allowed to ever occur again.
Plus, the television show that has effectively gripped the nation. Don't worry, not a suggestion that I'll identify who might be the victor last night, but I will be giving you guys as to how to spot a liar. What are the telltale signs? And as the Louvre password is identified as being Louvre for the security systems, I'll ask you about your password pitfalls and problems. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a review of Britain's biggest police force has found racial discrimination is baked into its culture and governance. It says black staff at the Metropolitan Police are labelled confrontational, while others are treated more leniently. Scotland Yard says it recognises the scale of the challenge and that further change is needed. Andy George is from the National Black Police Association and has told LBC News the report can't be just pushed under the carpet.
People are suffering those 30 patterns of harm on a daily basis. There are victims that are being deeply traumatised by the experiences of the Metropolitan Police Service and their employment within that. So that has to be wrong, and it no doubt has an impact on how the Metropolitan Police Service delivers its services to all communities in London.
Sir Keir Starmer says it's a matter for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor whether he agrees to an interview in the US. A Congress committee has requested that he gives evidence over his relationship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. It doesn't have the power to compel him to appear, and Andrew denies any wrongdoing. Speaking to Nick, though, the Housing Secretary Steve Reid says Andrew should seriously consider the request.
I think any individual that can help with an investigation of that gravity should go and help if they can. He is a private individual. It's up to him, but I think people should do what they can to help.
A potential split has emerged at the top of the Labour Party after its new deputy leader said the government should stick to its manifesto promises. Lucy Powell says the party should be following through not to raise taxes in the budget. The government repeatedly refused to rule out an income tax hike later this month. Three prisoners have been charged with the murder of another inmate at Wakefield Prison. 33-year-old Kyle Bevan, who murdered his partner's 2-year-old daughter, died on Wednesday. The men are due to appear before magistrates later. McDonald's is to bring in new sexual harassment training for its managers in the UK. It's part of an agreement with the Equality Watchdog, aiming to protect staff from abuse. It follows an investigation in 2022, which found employees were being routinely harassed. And shareholders at Tesla have approved a record-breaking pay package for its boss Elon Musk, worth up to $1 trillion, but it does depend on him meeting certain performance goals over the next decade. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 25 at 97.10. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today, and another mild day, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Yeah, the radiator's making a gurgling noise.
That's not a noise, it's a cry for help.
Talk to me. Is it your balancing? Is it trapped air from barometric pressure shifts? I see. Uh-huh.
Right, a simple flush and some inhibitor fluid will fix it in no time.
Our tradespeople understand what your home needs this winter. Download the Checkatrade app and book a Checkatrade approved tradesperson who'll agree costs up front with honest communication. Checkatrade, a job done right. Checkatrade, checkatrade.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 9:04, Friday, November the 7th. It's the blame game being played out with the most tragic of backgrounds. The families who blame the killer, Southport killer's mother and father, they say they failed. They even make the claim they knew, and they knew they failed. We'll give you full details on that, and I'll ask, and I'm fortunate enough to be one, it is the greatest job in the world to be a parent. I am so fortunate. But it also offers the most extraordinary challenges. How to try and be how to try and be a decent parent. And is it fair to suggest that the Southport killer's parents have failed? We'll give the full background of that. In other news, come on, admit it, were you glued to your TV last night? Well, reportedly, more than 10 million of... Don't worry, I'm not going to give it away. More than 10 million of you, and Us. I fell asleep. I was so annoyed. And I had it on the TV so that I can rewind, and I fell asleep again. I managed to fall asleep twice. But I will be giving you tips how to spot a liar. What are the telltale signs? And a bit of deception going on across the channel. Argue that the French haven't got a Clouseau. The security password to the system, the cameras and security systems at the Louvre was Louvre. Yes, you got that right. I'll be asking you how, I won't ask what it is, but how do you select your passwords and the frustration when you can't remember? Is it an exclamation at the end of the cat's name? Is it an asterisk at the end of the dog's name? For the love of God, what was my mother's maiden name?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Can I preface this by I fully understand and I respect the fact that the parents and families of the girls who lost their lives don't like the name of the killer being mentioned. They want their daughters remembered more than his name. But it will probably come out a couple of times. So with respect to those families, because it's very difficult to portray or present this story without obviously giving you some of the details. But let's go to events yesterday. The families of the girls who lost their lives in that Southport attack said that his mother and father had failed as parents by allowing evil unchecked under their own roof. In a series of powerful statements, the parents of the three girls said that Rudy Cabana's father, Alphonse, and mother, Letitia, knew how dangerous he was and should be held accountable. The killer was 17 when he brutally stabbed. Well, there is really no other way. I don't know why they put brutally in there. When he stabbed Elsie Dot Stancombe, who was 7, B.B. King, who was 6, and Alice Da Silva Aguia, who was 9 at that dance class in July of last year. His father, who's 49, admitted to the public inquiry investigating the murders he had been morally failed, those are his words, by not reporting his monster, his words again, son to police for ordering an arsenal of knives online and plotting an attack on his former school in the months and weeks before the atrocity. Now, let's hear a little of this and how he gave evidence his son poured a significant quantity of oil over his head and has threatened to kill him in 2024, not long before the Southport attacks. Here, then, are the words of the father, voiced by an actor.
His eyes were very red, and it seemed like he had some kind of mental anguish, some kind of mental pain. He was poking my chest and saying, if you get me out of here, this house, it may take a day, a week, or it may be years. I will kill you, and trust me, I will kill you.
The inquiry was told Mr. Rudakabar, the father, played down his son's violent behaviour to mental health services because he feared he, the son, would be placed in local authority care. There were no parental controls on the killer's computer, meaning the teenager was free to look up videos of war, genocide, and appropriate images of mass graves and vile injuries. This was a weird one. His father even bribed him to get him to wash. He'd pay his son £40 for every 3 showers that he took, and that was money the killer used to buy weapons, which were then delivered to the home. We'll talk parenting in a moment. Let's get the legal side first from Joshua Rosenberg, legal commentator, broadcaster and author. Let's start, if we may, Joshua. What is the purpose of this inquiry? Good morning. Joshua, can you hear me? We've got a problem. OK, let's try and get Joshua on a better line. Let's talk about the criminology side of this. Dr. Anthony Gunter is a criminologist at the Open University. These are charges being laid at the parents. Obviously, it's being heard at this inquiry. How much can a parent be involved in someone who commits crimes of this gravity, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I mean, obviously, good parenting. You'd want your the parent to have full control over their child and to know what's coming in the house, what they're looking at. Unfortunately, a case like this, it seems really complicated, and it seems the father was struggling, and the father didn't really have the skills or the ability to control what his son was looking at, or even control his daily behaviour. So it's really difficult. He should, but in a case where he doesn't, how do you get that support to that parent to do that? I mean, that's the really difficult question, because as a parent, all of us want to have, think that we know what our children are doing and got the best interests at heart. But many of them have better knowledge and better skill sets than we do when it comes to things like technology and computers and so forth. So that's a really difficult one.
Dr. Gunter, you've been a criminologist for more than a decade. When you hear the families, and of course we must put all sympathy towards them, that evil was unchecked under their own roof, under the parents' roof. Is there such a thing as evil?
No, I don't think there is. I think people do very, very evil things and very bad things. But understandably, the parents are very upset, and so we can all sympathise with them. But from a societal perspective, there's something's gone wrong with this boy. He's not well. He's done really bad things. He needs to be punished for it. But at the same time, something also went wrong from his parental perspective and also schools and other areas that could not intervene to make sure this child was safeguarded and protected earlier before it got to the point where that he did what he did.
The progression seems to be that he starts to look up, this is the killer, videos of war and genocide, images of mass graves. He then starts to effectively compile an arsenal of knives. He then starts, it would seem, to plot various attacks as well. Is this a sort of well-trodden path of someone who commits crimes of this gravity?
It seems it's radicalisation, actually. It's grooming. You know, these vulnerable young men, usually young men, are radicalised, whether it's the far right, whether it's Islamisation, whatever it is. You know, these vulnerable young people are a victim to the internet, and therefore you do need adults, wider society to check on it and to bring them back in line and to give them support and help, especially at that young age, because if you don't, they become, you know, adults that are doing really, you know, bad things and violent things or evil things, you know, depending on your perspective.
Dr. Anthony Gunter, thank you. You're a criminologist at the Open University. Let's try again for Joshua Rosenberg, legal commentator, author and broadcaster. Now, Joshua, the statements were released following the end of the first phase of the inquiry that's being held at Liverpool Town Hall. What is the main aim of the inquiry? Morning, Joshua.
Good morning. I'm sorry to have missed you earlier. The main aim is to find out what happened and to try to stop this sort of thing happening again. That's the same with all public inquiries. And we've already had, obviously, the criminal proceedings, so it's a question of trying to investigate and see what can be done. I think the point is that the father, Alphonse, has accepted moral responsibility for what happened, for failing to intervene. But we don't usually impose criminal liability on people who fail to prevent crimes. There are one or two crimes. Corporations that fail to prevent fraud can be charged, because otherwise it's very difficult to stop corporate fraud. But we don't usually require people to intervene and fix them with criminal penalties if they fail.
And yet, if, as the inquiry has heard, the killer, I won't use his last name out of deference, if the killer is compiling effectively an arsenal of knives and making threats, is there not a duty there? As you rightly say, an employer has a duty of care. Does a father or mother not have a duty of care to inform the police about that?
I think so. In those circumstances, and looking at that evidence, I think that the parents do have a duty. Yes, they were threatened, but obviously if the police intervene, that might be something that could be managed, although you can understand how they were concerned about themselves, and that's understandable. They presumably could have had no idea of what their son was going to go on to do. So certainly in those circumstances, I think there is a moral responsibility on parents, however much they love their son, in their son's best interests,
yes,
to get help and intervene. But as I say, criminal liability is a completely different issue.
Lastly, the anti-terror programme Prevent has had what I think we could say is a fairly unfair to say checkered background. Three times the killer was referred to it. Three times it was moved on because he did not have any religious or ideological motivation. We need to have a closer look at Prevent, don't we?
We certainly do. I think, unfortunately, I'm not going to say it's a box-ticking exercise, but people do look at problems in line with what they've seen in the past. And I hope one of the things that will come out of this inquiry is to take a much broader approach to assessing risk. Yes, you can't predict the future, but there were telltale signs, and if those had been known to the authorities, maybe this tragedy could have been prevented.
Good to have you on. Best wishes to you, Joshua Rosenberg, legal commentator, author and broadcaster. Thank you. The parents say, we believe Gabbana's parents should be held to account for what they allowed to happen. Parents should be culpable when they knowingly allow such evil to exist unchecked under their own roof. He compiled an arsenal, a pile of knives, whatever you want to say. He threatened his own parents. He was watching videos of war and vile injuries. Surely they should have done something. Failed parents? Pick up on your views on that after this. 9:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Her reports found racial discrimination is baked into the leadership and culture of Britain's biggest police force. A cabinet minister has told LBC that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should seriously consider cooperating with a US Congress committee. And three prisoners have been charged with murder after the death of another inmate at Wakefield Prison. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are severe delays on the M25 clockwise, heading towards Junction 6 at Godstone. Traffic is currently being held and there are lengthy queues on the approach. Still very slow on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound from the main M4 down to the terminals and on the main carriageway as well, back to the M25. And that was after the Heathrow tunnel was closed earlier. Everything's open, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the A3 southbound heading towards Burnt Common. And that's where a lorry has broken down. Whitechapel High Street's very slow northbound up to Aldgate East Station. And that's because of the ongoing works. And still no district line between Turnham Green and Richmond.
This is LBC.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on. And it doesn't get any better than this. With an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. With measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's come to some of you. Come to your calls in just a moment. Just read some of the, because I haven't done enough really of the texts and the emails that come in. Caroline says, I completely agree with your criminologist. There were systemic failures. It's completely understandable why grieving and extremely traumatised families could feel differently. Lenny simply says, the PREVENT programme is a complete failure. It needs to be taken apart and reconstituted. Thanks for that. Scott, coming to you in just a moment. Do you have any degree of sympathy for the killer's parents? Bear in mind that they will never see their son taste freedom again. He will never come out. Quite rightly, he will never come out. By the way, I'm not for one moment, please don't think I'm carrying a brief for him for a second. He was 17 when he committed those crimes, when he killed those little girls at the Taylor Swift dance class. But his parents will forever now, whenever they walk down the street, if they go through a supermarket, they go to a store, get on a train, they'll be nudging. That's... You remember the South... Yeah, that's his mum. That's his dad. Those are the parents who failed. And is it a failure? And if it is a failure, then is it right that the little girl's parents are saying that they want some kind of action, they want explanations? How would they knowingly allow such evil to exist unchecked? And is there a concept such as evil? If you think when a baby arrives, he or she's not evil, are they? You can't be born. Can you be born evil? Or is it a set of circumstances through whatever might happen to you, almost certainly through your... as you're raised by your family, I suppose possibly in some circumstances it could be that you get jilted in love or whatever it might be, and that sends you completely nuts. But should any sympathy be directed to the parents? Because they will forever now. That's the dad. That's the mum of the Southport killer. And is there such a thing as evil, or is it kind of almost like learnt, in a sense? Scott's in West Hampstead. G'day, Scott. Good to talk to you again. What are you telling me on this one?
Hi, Nick. I've got a bit of sympathy with the parents. I mean, I've been involved in scenarios like this, not with killers, but over a 30-year career as an educational psychologist. And I would want to know, and I'm sure the inquiry is going to look at this, is what happened at the earlier stages when this young man was obviously, you know, throwing up a lot of behavioural issues in school. So that would have been known about by the teaching staff, by the head teacher, the education welfare officer, probably the school psychologist, perhaps the school psychologist. And the first thing that should have been done was to be a case conference, and maybe this has already happened, a conference of all the professionals looking at the situation, and yes, the parents in this case, I have some sympathy for them, were in denial and weren't being upfront, necessarily fully upfront with the agencies. But in this case, I mean, I've been in round-the-table discussions with police as well, with psychiatrists, with the family doctors, head teachers, probably hundreds of times over the course of my career.
Scott, I want to come back to you, but I must just interrupt just to say, as regards the prevention program, or prevent, I'm sorry, three referrals, none of them taken up because there was no, and I quote, religious nor ideological motivation. Had this been held at an education level, what would have been the bar that had to have been set? What would you have had to prove that the killer was doing to then get further involvement? Scott.
Well, you'd be looking at a risk assessment, looking at the risks within the family, you know, to the general community. And, in all of these discussions, I would be asked many, many times in those conferences, should this child be removed from the family and come into care? I always said yes. I always erred on the side of caution. And this a conference like this should have taken place at an earlier stage. And
Scott, what were the most grave circumstances, the most serious case you ever dealt with concerning a school pupil?
Good question. And many, many times it's been child abuse within the home.
Did you ever, I mean, please God, not on the violence of the level we witness in Southport, but did you ever encounter school children who were involved in knives, possibly involved in serious crime, possibly involved in stabbings?
Much lesser situations I'd have been involved in, much lesser. And I mean, the warning signs must have been there that this young man was of grave risk.
He really was. Scott, thank you. Kylie's in Manchester. Kylie, what can you say to this? Good morning.
Morning. Hi, how are you? I have much sympathy for the families who've lost their children. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone can take that away from their grieving process. But at the same time, I feel that the family of the young man have been let down by the system. This is
but how? What you mean by the Prevent program, Kylie? Is that
okay?
What you...
I don't think a child. I think he's got autism and he's got other learning difficulties and mental health, because people with autism and ADHD
Kylie. I am not one, but if I was a parent of an autistic child now, I'd be shouting at the radio, my autistic child doesn't go around stabbing little girls at a dance class. What's this woman talking
about?
But
if they don't get the support they need, that's what will happen.
Kylie, you can't suggest that every autistic child is going to be
from
a
from the beginning. No, he needed a care because it ended up there, but it started somewhere where this child could have got the best care support in terms of school, in terms of the doctors, in terms of the mental health team, in terms of social services. And everybody has failed, and it leaves the families. In my case, my child, who is now 19, when I realized I was not getting any help from everybody, I took it into my hand. I go to a private counselor. I take him to football. I take him to
What are the issues for your child? What are the issues for your son?
Because he has autism, ADHD, epilepsy.
Hopefully he's not compiling an arsenal of knives and watching videos of people being beheaded.
if they are isolated and there's no support, because one eventually when the system, and especially as they become older, there's this age of 17 years old. When your child reaches 17 years old, social services and the government do not support the family. I surfed that 17-year-old. No, it was 17. From 16 years old, you get a letter saying that we're no longer going to support your child because he's going to transform to 18 an years adult, old. Yeah. So an adult. So that 1 year of when the child is 17, it's so crucial.
Carly, I have to leave it there. Good luck with the boy. Thank you for your views. I've had to sort of mount a defence for the many listeners who will have autistic children, children with ADHD, who do not get involved at the level of barbaric crime as the Southport killer. I think I've successfully only named once. I've really tried not to, out of deference to the parents. Right, we will come back to that very serious subject. But for many of you, there was some serious TV viewing last night. The tremendous theme tune for The Traitors, composed by Sam Watts, so congratulations to Sam Watts on that. And don't worry, there is not, there will be not going to spoil your watching if you Sky Plus it. We're not going to give you a clue as to who triumphed. And a little bit of a personal confession, all of my team were into the original Traitors. I was sort of lent upon and realised, and you should be guided by young people, the joy of my job is I'm surrounded by young people and that keeps you relatively youthful. So I thought, right, I will try Celebrity Traitors. Man alive, I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. I think I've got a sort of bromance with Joe Marr. I mean, he's fantastic, Joe Marr. What a clever guy. Anyway, it got me thinking, as it is reported that more than 10 million of you watched last night, how do you spot a liar? So we decided to turn to Professor Richard Wiseman. Now, he's a professor of psychology at the University of Hertfordshire and is an expert in deception and lying. And while he's never lied in his life, there might have been a bit of deception because he was a magician. Professor joins me now. Can I call you Richard? Good morning.
Please do. Please do.
Come on. What are the classic tells if I'm trying to tell a fib?
Well, we often, and you see this in the Traitors show, we tend to base it on visual signs. So whether someone's sweating, whether they're rubbing their hands together, whether they're moving around more and all those things. And they're all very controllable. We are used to, you know, keeping eye contact and not being quite so anxious and so on. So those things are not the good signs. It's what we base our decisions on, but they're not the good sign. The best signs are in the words we say and how we say them. So it's why, I mean, in fact, years ago, I did an experiment where we had people lying and telling the truth on television and doing the same on radio. And when we asked the public to detect the liar, the people on television were pretty much at chance, and the people who'd listened to the interview on the radio were much, much better because they were forced onto those verbal signals, which are the real ones. The ums, the ahs, the lack of detail, the shorter answers, all those things.
There was a famous political aspect to that, wasn't it? The Nixon-Kennedy debate in the US presidential, where if you saw it on the telly, you called it for Kennedy because Nixon was sweating profusely, and the other way around if you listened to it on the wireless. That's right, Richard,
isn't
it? Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's where the study came from. And in fact, I interviewed Sir Robin Day twice after the original study. Mm. Once he told the truth, once he lied, so it should have been 50-50. It pretty much was on television. On radio, went up to about 75% accuracy. Because people were forced to listen to the soundtrack. And when you did that, you suddenly thought, my goodness, he's being evasive. It's obvious he's not answering with any emotional depth. He's not using the word me, my, I, all those sorts of things. So if people put their attention more on those sorts of signals, they become better lie detectors.
Okay, so I'm in the library, and I know I can rely on you not to give anything away because we will have people listening to us. So yep. Say I'm in the library and I'm talking to Kat or I'm talking to Alan or I'm talking to... And I say, honestly, I am a faithful and I fix them with my eyes like I'm fixing you down this video screen. Am I giving the right, even if I perhaps was a traitor, am I giving the right indication? What should I be doing or not be doing?
Well, I think at that instance, in terms of detecting the lie or not, you probably, the person who's on the receiving end of that hasn't got much of a chance at all because it's a prepared lie. You don't feel particularly guilty about it. It's in the context of a game and so on. However, when they're chatting about what they've been up to, whether they are a faithful or a liar or not, there you listen out. Who's not giving you the information? Who's leaving a longer gap between the end of a question, the beginning of an answer? is you think through what a traitor should be not saying and what a faithful should be saying. That's cognitively quite difficult. So okay. That's what it is. But the fact is, we're not very good at this. And that's what the show has kind of shown over all the episodes. Actually, we're really not very good at detecting liars, even though we think we are. And the reason for that is because lies and deception bond us together. You know, if your friend says, oh, what do you think of this new jacket? And you go, oh, my goodness, it's absolutely terrible. That's the end of that friendship, probably. So actually, those kind of lies that we like to try and detect are also bonding us together.
Can I talk to you about my new wife? I got married I got married a couple of months ago, right? We won't go into the circumstances at the end of my marriage prior to that. Anyway, I got married a couple of months ago. And the problem with her is if I say, you did pick up the dry cleaning, didn't you? When she lies, she can't help but laugh. If she tries to tell a lie, she just laughs. How common is that?
Well, that single tell there is, of course, very helpful for you.
Well, hopefully it'll only be about dry cleaning, but we'll see as we go on.
I think it bodes pretty well for the relationship as well, because there's a kind of honesty there that may be bonding you together, and good couples have that. Obviously, good couples don't lie to one another, and there she's sending you a very obvious signal. Because it could be a really sophisticated double bluff, and when it comes to proper lies that not to do with the dry cleaning, she might be very sophisticated and not laughing. And there you're falling for it. That's potentially bad news. I don't want to wreck your relationship.
Right. Where's the phone? lastly, I wouldn't expect you to name any, but you've obviously got, I'd imagine, an interest in news and current affairs. You will have seen many prime ministers, many politicians, many chancellors, many overseas presidents and prime ministers. Can you spot someone who's telling a lie? Can you see that and say, he's not believing a word he says? Sorry, Richard, go.
Yeah, when it comes to politicians, I think it's a very, very easy signal, which is if their lips are moving, it's probably a lie.
Good speaking with you, Richard. Thank you. Richard Wiseman, Professor of Psychology at the University of Hertfordshire, expert in deception and lying. And as regards deception, he's a former magician. We're a little bit behind the clock. Coming up after the news, though, as it is revealed, the password, they have not ordered clouseau. The password for the Louvre was the Louvre. I'll be asking you about your password pitfalls. It's 9:32, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is read by Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should go and help the US Congress if he can. Democrats have written to Andrew requesting an interview over his links to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Three prisoners have been charged with the murder of a fellow inmate at Wakefield Prison in West Yorkshire. Kyle Bevan, who murdered his partner's two-year-old daughter, was found dead in his cell on Wednesday. And a report's concluded discrimination against black people is baked into the culture and leadership of Britain's biggest police force. The internal review has called for structural change at the Metropolitan Police. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today, and another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A welcome diversion. Not that I'm for a moment pretending that lying is something to laugh about. It's not. It's desperately serious. And enjoy, traitors, if you have taped it or put it on Sky Plus or whatever. Excuse me. also on Sky Plus, excuse me. Right. Yeah, a welcome diversion because we have to come back to the awful situation concerning the Southport killer and the totally understandable fury from the families of the three girls. Let's name them again because the families always say how they don't want him remembered. They want their little girls remembered. B.B. King, Elsie Dot Stancombe and Alice Da Silva Aguiar. Let's get those names out there. But they want the parents of those girls, want the parents of the killer now, possibly to face action. Parents should be culpable when they knowingly allow such evil to exist unchecked under their own roof. They knew how dangerous he was, yet they stayed silent. They didn't report concerns. They didn't act. And in doing so, they failed, not only as parents, but as members of our society. Strong words. Sharon is in Southfields. You're on the radio. What do you want to tell me, Sharon? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Basically, my son has ADHD, and he wouldn't harm a fly, but that wasn't the point I was making. I think, yes, they do, and parents do have huge responsibility for the way their son behaved, because if your son is behaving like that and stashing weapons in the house, you know, you do have to report it. You have to get urgent, you know, mental illness help. And I think he has psychopathic tendencies because psychopaths don't feel any remorse.
No.
They don't have any remorse.
I fear he would have killed more little girls if he hadn't been, if they hadn't acted in the way they
and
did.
And you can treat psychopaths, you know, you can, or sociopaths, you can treat them. So that's really my point, Nick. They should have sought medical help. I mean, my father was a GP, he used to inject.
Well, he probably called it stabbing, in all honesty.
Daddy would be 93 if he was alive. He used to inject mentally ill patients who were going through episodes with Largactyl, and you just, you know, quickly stab them in their bottom with the Largactyl injection, and that would calm them down. But this boy definitely needed something.
Can I read you a little part of a text that's come in, Sharon, from someone called Claire? The woman on the radio blaming autism. She's wrong. My son has had ASD, mental health issues, and many other issues. He's 18. He wasn't getting support other than ourselves until he was 12. The diagnosis process was a shambles. He was supported by myself, says Claire. There does seem so many people that they say, oh, well, he's got ADHD or he's got autism. This doesn't in any way explain what this killer did, does it?
No, my son is ADD, and he has been. I mean,
that's attention deficit disorder, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
How does that show itself then? What you know? What does your boy? If I met him, if I was to bump into you in Southfields near Wimbledon, and hello, we spoke on the radio. How would your son be towards me?
Incredibly friendly, quite introverted, and very very kind. But when he was a little one, when he got diagnosed when he was 6. He was very hyperactive in school, you know, running around, but hard to concentrate, that type of thing.
Right.
Never a violent intention in his mind. He is so gentle. You cannot blame ADHD or ADD. They do have these sort of spates of when they throw everything around the room. Not my son, that's ADHD, you know, intense ADHD. But not to kill like that. That's really psychopathy.
Yes, psychopathic.
Should have been treated.
Question, is it just the one child or you have
I have two.
Okay, so I have two. Would you go as far as to say those parents, the killer's parents, they failed?
Yes, they did.
You would say they failed. Okay, look after them. Sharon, thank you. Josh in Tunbridge Wells. Josh, you're ex-police.
Hello, good morning, Nick. Still
you're still
the
in
job.
The job. Okay, are you up here or are you down there in Kent?
I'd rather not say.
All right, okay.
But my view on this, I think, first of all, you know, condolences to the family and friends of these children. And, you know, within my experience of what I do and also my personal life, I find it quite upsetting and almost disgusting when we hear this phrase of, you know, the suspects. Parents have also lost a son or a daughter. No, they haven't. They are in prison or they've been dealt with, whatever happens, their outcome, whether it's a terrorist or obviously someone who's murdered children. I think it's very disingenuous to the victims and their families and, you know, the survivors of such incidents for us to sort of say, oh, you know, should we be concerned about the suspect's parents. Well, I think that's very, very disingenuous, and the focus, like the parents have said, they don't want to name him and he shouldn't be named. And we should remember those poor girls. And
absolutely. Let me ask you this. As someone who's involved in law enforcement, there is a sense from those girls' parents that there should be some culpability, that this was a young man who, I'll use the expression again, was compiling an arsenal of knives, was threatening behaviour to his mother and his father, who was having to be paid to shower, which is probably more of a mental health issue than a legal one, and was watching videos, which I can't really go into detail on this show in case children are listening. Josh, legal culpability, responsibility here in your view?
In my obviously I don't know the ins and outs.
No, you're only going the same version as me.
Yeah, I do feel there is a certain amount of culpability, much like we have a lot of children, especially in London, where they are obviously being used to sell drugs or whatever, and the parents are aware that stuff may be in the house, such as weapons. They might find, you know, a knife or even, unfortunately, a gun. You know, you have a duty of care because you're aware that that is in the house. Now, if they were aware that these knives are in the house, you're not allowed to have an offensive weapon at home anymore. So, you know, they are culpable because they knew he had those items. Whether they took them away or whether they got the police involved or reported it, they should have done. And unfortunately, they do have blood on their hands. I've got a brother. He's got autism and mental health issues. He's had breakdowns and moments where he's, very paranoid, thinking that he's going to get attacked and you know, he feels like he has to sort of defend himself. Well, clearly there's severe issues there. I have had to take it upon myself to go and deal with him, make sure that he goes to
hospital. How old is he, Josh?
He is 36.
Oh, crikey.
Now, so he's an adult. But there's a lot of issues there, and, you know, childhood wasn't great. But, if I just sat and said, well, it's not my job to, you know, deal with that, you know, I would have blood on my hands if he did go and do something or harmed himself. We have a duty of care, and especially when, you know, we're talking about this guy who's 17, you know, in the eyes of the law, he's a child. I think people in this country and further afield, we need to parent our children. You know, it's just, there's no consequences, no accountability.
Let me ask you this lastly, Josh, then I'll let you crack on. Have the parents failed? Josh, good luck with the job, wherever you might be doing it. Joe's in Greenwich. Joe, I'll start with that question with you, if I may. Do you think the parents have failed?
Yes, they have, Nick.
And just elaborate on that.
Yes. As a parent myself, when I saw behavioural change in my son, I raised the alarm. And I come to find that the perpetrators are always known, but parents like myself who raised the alarm don't get the help and support that is needed.
In what? Okay, how do you know? Why would you say that? What makes you say that?
Okay, so, so my son was taken from me. He was murdered just over a year ago. During the trial, I've come to find out that the main perpetrator was already known to the authorities. He'd done this prior to taking my son's life. He stabbed someone prior to taking my son's life on two occasions. He never got the help. He never got the support. And like your previous caller said, I hate the narrative that the parents of the perpetrators also lost the son. No, they don't. Their son's in prison. They can still phone them. They can still go and visit should they choose to. And the parents of the victims don't get that privilege. We no longer get that privilege because we've been robbed of that.
How do you feel towards your son's killer?
I feel anger. I feel anger towards them for their actions, and I feel anger, a lot of anger towards the authorities for not preventing this. I feel anger towards the school, I feel anger towards the police, and I feel a lot of anger towards the local authority. And then when they talk about the reviews highlight these issues, but this has been happening for years and nothing's been done. And then you keep hearing the phrase, it's so that they can learn. And I keep asking them the question, what have they learned over the years? What do they intend to learn now? And more than anything, I need accountability. They asked me what that looks like. I said, in terms of the failures, people need to lose their job. And it's just like these early prison releases. No one loses their job. The people that should lose their job over this, they remain in those positions to continue failing us.
Do you want to mention your son's case, or would you rather not give listeners his name?
Oh, Dejon Campbell. His name was Dejon Campbell.
He was the lad in Woolwich, wasn't he?
Yes, he was the lad in Woolwich, yeah.
And that was dealt with relatively... That was this year that went... Was it this
year? Yeah, the sentencing was this year.
Sorry, the sentencing,
the sentencing was this year. That in itself is a joke. that in itself is a joke, and I have to laugh, because if I don't laugh, I'm going to end up breaking down. There is an independent review going on at the moment, and...
It's not being heard in a court, is it? Just so that we don't...
It's not being held... Okay. It's okay, not being ahead. Held in a court. It's been... it's been... ordered by the local authority. But even when you look at cases like these, they are not dealt with individually. They come into families and there's like they've got already set a blueprint of failures, and it's just their approach. And when you speak to them about their approach, you're not listened to. Just like when I spoke to them about concerns I had around my son, I wasn't listened to. And during the process, you're not listened to. And you think when a review is taking place, all the information is presented to the reviewer.
What were the concerns you shared with your local authority, with your local council?
So initially I went to his school, and my concern was the change in behaviour. The fact that he was vaping, he's telling me that he's getting these vapes from school. The vaping escalated to smoking cannabis.
So he was running with the wrong crowd?
Yes. The school was aware of this.
Mm.
And... despite all my concerns, I'm coming to find out information now that I didn't even knew then.
You say
no information was ever shared with me.
You say the sentencing was a joke. One of my colleagues has just put up on the screen. The two teenagers got a total of 32 years.
Yeah. But you see, you find in that courtroom, you listen to the maximum sentencing they could give. There's consideration for the perpetrators and their needs. And then the victim is an afterthought.
Right.
So the sentence handed down is after they've considered that one of them didn't have any emotional intelligence. He's too stupid to understand what he's done, and it doesn't take away from their actions.
Can I ask you one last thing? We're talking about the parents of the little girls who lost their life up in Southport. They talk about there being evil in that house. The teenagers who killed your boy... were they born evil? Is there such a thing as evil? What happened there?
I think it was... I don't know about it, but I find that it's all learnt behaviour. Like, my son wasn't born to be dismissive and rude as he was in the end, which is why I raised the alarm.
Yeah.
Or this was something that he was learnt.
Jo, thanks for sharing so much. I heard that a bit of it got distressing for you, and you're still coming to terms. Sentencing, I think, was last month, wasn't it? Yes, it was last month. Goodness me. Still so fresh in your memory. Jo, thank you. You're listening to LBC 948. Let's get some news headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told LBC that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should go and help the US Congress if he can. A report concluded discrimination against black people is baked into the culture and governance of the Metropolitan Police. And searches are continuing for the Algerian sex offender Brahim Kaddour Sharif, who was mistakenly released from HMP Wandsworth last week. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK today. Another mild day, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise to junction 6 at Godstone. It's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed. Busy on the A2 westbound up to Gravesend, a car has broken down. And also on the A2, there are lengthy delays westbound up from Blackheath to New Cross. There are delays on that stretch of about half an hour. The A11 Whitechapel High Street is slow northbound up to Aldgate East Station, and that's because of the ongoing works. On the Underground, no district line between Turnham Green and Richmond. The Metropolitan line can't run between Baker Street and Aldgate. Then there are minor delays on the rest of the line. And also no Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Yet more evidence of racism being baked into the Metropolitan Police, and why cultural figures are celebrating changes to the curriculum, while weirdos are very cross.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Hey Sainsbury's, got any festive bargains to help me beat the Christmas rush?
Absolutely. We've got savings on the classics this week. Get a litre of Baileys half price at £11 and 7.89 Prosecco for £5.50 with Nectar.
Oh, cheers to that.
Want to get ahead this Christmas and save big? Ask Sainsbury's.
Prosecco offer ends 12th of November, 18 plus Nectar required. Available in store and online, excluding locals. Delivery fees may apply. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply. Please drink responsibly.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, oh, going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Having a very tough discussion, aren't we, about the aftermath of those horrific events in Southport and the inquiry, which has finished its first phase up in Liverpool. Chaz says kids are not born evil. It's lack of parenting and who they hang around with that's the issue. And I'm just checking. No, I can read this. Lisa, a 14-year-old girl killed my son. Her mum kept asking for help as she had a violent criminal and mental health long history. The state agencies did nothing. And you repeat the word nothing. Let's go to Mubashir in Birmingham. Mubashir, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. What you can tell me as regards this conversation, sir?
So I've heard a lot. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong and please correct me. I've heard a lot about people saying people with autism or mental health, that somehow negates responsibility for the actions they take. Have I heard that wrong?
What we're trying to do is to work out, well, is it fair to point blame towards the parents? That's what we're trying to work out here, Mubashir.
I've heard that, and I've heard, obviously, other aspects of it as well. I want to talk about the mental health aspect of it, because I myself have autism, and I myself... And I've heard you just read a message about somebody saying that the system does nothing. I currently have an active case.
Oh, hold on. Whoa. Sorry, went in the High Court. Hang on. Right. What is in... Just give me... Is it medical negligence? What is it that we're talking about here? But just what it's being filed under?
I don't really want to talk about the case, but what I'm saying is here is that we're looking at the aspects of the parents. We're looking at the aspects of what could have been done, but we're not looking at the services. I myself... without my consent, was discharged from mental health services. And there's a lot of cases like that as well.
When you say without your consent, did you ask then that you wished to stay there, Mubashir?
Yes.
And what was their response when you asked for that?
Because of the service I was asking for, so I'm asking for EMDR therapy, because the
I'm sorry, you're going to have to help me. EMDR, I'm trying to find my phone. What is EMDR?
It's trauma therapy.
I see. Okay, right.
Because of funding, and obviously I'll get that, I'm not naive, I'm not on the waiting list. Because I've raised and gone through the formal channels to try and get myself the care that I need.
So this is eye movement, desensitization and reprocessing. Is that right?
That's right.
I
guess the wider point here is that, yeah, if me as a parent, I'm a parent of five children, if I had my child, my eldest is 21, if he was doing the actions that were happening, would I pick the phone up and call the police? Of course I would. First and foremost, I would take actions as any parent would themselves within their ability to try and do what they can.
What made you think that EMDR would help you? Why did you request that?
So I have been through a lot of trauma in my life, and it was actually recommended through support groups that that's actually what I needed. But again, this is a serious indictment on the services involved, that I actually had to find out myself what I needed instead of the services telling me what I needed.
Does this mean you have a degree of sympathy for the case in Liverpool then?
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, because it is said that by some, that as the killer was displaying signs of autism and some kind of emotional need, more should have been done by the state.
On the contrary. On the contrary, when I started this call, what I said is my understanding was from your callers that if people have mental health and autism, that somehow negates responsibility, and I'm completely against that, because I'm somebody who suffers a lot and I've been through so much, and I hold myself responsible for my actions.
Well, you've covered all the bases there. Good luck. I hope you get the treatment that you feel you need, and be well. Thank you. Let's get at least one more call in. Gemma's in Chelmsford. Gemma, do you think these parents have failed?
I have really mixed views on it. I am a parent of an autistic child, and I'm also autistic myself. Now, I do obviously think that the parents have failed in some senses, but at the same point, I kind of feel like when children are struggling, and just for context, my child was at school at five and displaying really extreme violent behaviour. He was struggling so much. And I had another autistic person say to me, why are you sending him? Why are you forcing him to go to school? And it's because you're kind of expected to, you're told that you have to do that. Any kind of help is aimed at getting the autistic person back into school. Mm-hmm. It's not really aimed at helping them. It's all aimed at pushing them back into a school in a system that doesn't work for them. Any help for the parents, I've had courses for, and it's about broadening the autistic person's mind. You know, feed them a different pasta if they like penne, give them spirals. And it's not really, none of the autistic person's needs are really taken into consideration, and it just causes kind of further trauma down the line. Also, because of the autistic diagnosis, a lot of kind of help services just chalk it up to autism, and they don't look any deeper, and this is where other
Be looking? What should they be looking for? Just as
Well, they definitely should have kind of psychiatric evaluations. I mean, we saw a psychiatrist, which was really, really helpful. And I was lucky enough to be able to take him out of school and fight for an out-of-school package for him.
Well, I'm proud that's proved successful, because you had the last word of the day. Indeed, you've had the last word of the week. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for the week. James O'Brien is limbering up, coming up on the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The same to you. Time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I just got a little bit distracted on my way into the studio by two things. The first is I just walked past Jonathan Ross in the corridor, and I didn't have the opportunity to stop and get all the insider gossip about traitors. No spoilers, I promise. And the second is I just spotted that story about Elon Musk securing a $1 trillion deal to continue running Tesla. And I don't know how many noughts there are in a trillion. Don't text me, because my inbox will become completely cluttered. But I'll find out and tell you, if you, like me, don't already know, after the news headlines. But we begin with two of the biggest institutions in this country, possibly the two biggest or the two most important, and baked-in racism.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, pressure is increasing on Andrew Mountbatten Windsor to comply with a US investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. A Congress committee has requested that he gives evidence over his friendship with the late sex offender. Cabinet Minister Steve Reid told LBC earlier that Andrew should seriously consider the request, while the Shadow Minister Claire Coutinho also thinks he should take part.
I think the situation has been incredibly sad and, you know, awful for victims, of course. Imagine all of these things that they must be seeing. I think he would be wise to cooperate. Obviously, that's his decision. He's not compelled to, but I think considering everything that's happened, he would be wise to cooperate with any investigations.
The US committee doesn't have the power to compel Andrew to appear, and he denies any wrongdoing. A review has found anti-black racism is baked into the Metropolitan Police's HR systems. It's concluded the Met's leadership, governance and culture are producing racial harm. Scotland Yard says it recognises the scale of the challenges. Three prisoners have been charged with the murder of a fellow inmate at Wakefield Prison in West Yorkshire. Kyle Bevan, who murdered his partner's two-year-old daughter, was found dead in his cell on Wednesday. Searches are continuing for an Algerian sex offender who was mistakenly released from HMP Wandsworth. It emerged on Tuesday that Brahim Kador Sharif was released in error last Wednesday. The Prime Minister has promised to step up and fix the justice system after a number of mistaken releases in recent weeks. ITV has confirmed it's in early discussions to sell its media and entertainment arm to Sky. If a deal is agreed, the division would be worth up to £1.6 billion. And Tesla shareholders have approved a record-breaking pay package for their boss Elon Musk, which could be worth $1 trillion. The unprecedented deal drew huge applause at the firm's annual meeting overnight. The deal depends on the world's richest man meeting certain performance goals over the next decade. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 50 at 96.85. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers will move across the UK throughout today. And another mild day, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the answer to the question that I posed a moment ago, and despite me asking you, importuning even you not to text me with your answers, many of you did, some incorrectly. The answer, what am I going to do now? I'm going to be all sniffy about people who I think have got it wrong, and then it'll turn out they got it right and I got it wrong, and I'll look like a wombat. 12 zeros in a trillion. I'd quite like to talk about that, but I'm not quite sure how to. It's not just the vulgarity of it, the obscenity of it, the idea that anybody is worth that sort of money, essentially for selling cars. but what it says about our society, but also the impunity that man enjoys The way that you can be filmed doing Nazi salutes, you can incite race riots on the streets of the United Kingdom, you can tell absolutely unparalleled racist lies about a country you know nothing at all about. You can champion serial criminals who do nothing but spread lies and division in our midst. You can do all of these things. You can use your money to put a man found to have incited an insurrection in his own country by his own Congress back into the White House. The list of things you can do if you are rich enough without any pushback, punishment or consequence is, I would argue this morning, I would argue that it's infinite. It's infinite, or at least there are a trillion ways in which you could demonstrate that once you achieve a certain level of wealth, you can do whatever you want. Jeffrey Epstein thought that he could, of course, but I guess in some ways perhaps he wasn't wealthy enough. I don't know what the phone-in would be about this, but it feels like a very sad moment. I don't know how much history you've got, for example. There were no barons more powerful or richer than Henry VIII, and if there were, he'd just turn up on a Tuesday and ask for their house. Isn't that how he got hold of Hampton Court? Wasn't Hampton Court built for somebody else? And Henry VIII just turned up one day and said, "Oh, nice house you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it." And they decided one of the Thomases, almost certainly one of the Thomases, I forget which one, Cranmer, Cromwell, Moore, Thomas someone, Seymour, I don't know. Speaking of Seymour, there's a story in the news today about the descendants of the brother of Jane Seymour, still living in a house that they had for 400 years. But remember that if David Lammy gets promoted to a big job in the cabinet, then according to Dominic Cummings, who's become the latest self-styled brain of Brexit to out himself as a purveyor of absolutely 100% proof racism, then it's evidence of unfair overpromotion. Says the son-in-law of an aristocrat. I think it was Wolsey. Was it Wolsey at Hampton Court? Let me read you a message from Jim, because this is, it moves directly to the heart of what I want to talk about. It's not Musk, unless you can come up with a brilliant question about Elon Musk, and you can text it to 84850, or indeed WhatsApp it to 03456060973, then I will, well, I won't pay you, obviously, but you will earn my eternal gratitude if you come up with a really good way into this question. What, I toyed with the idea of doing the 10-year game. You know, you look at poverty in the world, you look at what we thought about Nazism and fascism 10 years ago, you look at what we thought we knew about ourselves and our own societies. How would you explain to someone who just woken up from a 10-year coma, how somebody who is a, executor of Nazi salutes and a disseminator of terrible, terrible racist lies can be cheered to the rafters and offered a $1 trillion pay deal in a country that used to style itself as a great defender, a bastion of freedoms, a country where the current president was found to have incited an insurrection against an absolutely unchallengeable election result. The complete collapse of all the things that we once held dear seems to me to be distilled down this morning into a $1 trillion. Listen, he's not going to make $1 trillion unless he sells a gazillion cars. And at the moment, Tesla isn't exactly covering itself in glory for a whole bunch of reasons. But the idea that that's somehow just normal and getting waved through, it just fascinates me. But anyway, Jim's been in touch. Jim, definitely not a racist, by the way. He writes, "You did very well this morning, James. You managed to get 5 sentences out before the word racism was injected. Isn't it all a bit tired now, mate?" And it occurred to me that Jim won't be alone. There will be, in fact, should we play the history game with Jim? I may have a little look at the history of the text that he sent to the programme in a moment, just to get an indication of exactly where he's coming from. Because there are 2 stories in the news today, or in the news this week. One is looking at the Metropolitan Police and the, once again, inalienable evidence that anti-black discrimination is systemic. This looks at leadership, governance, culture, and concludes that racial harm was maintained through a repeated institutional sequence, to which Jim's response is, "So what? They're black. Tell them to get over it. Get the chip off their shoulder. Stop playing the race card." Wes Streeting, who Jim may pay a little bit of attention to because he is white, Wes Streeting reported this week that racism in the NHS has become, worse than ever. It's become close to endemic, and it includes not